Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 92, your one-stop for manga news and commentary for the week of April 7th, 2014. I am Derek, and I am joined by...
I am from space.
April Fool's was last week. Unless this is the biggest plot twist in the history of podcasts.
I am not from space.
Damn. Oh, well. Yeah, that would have explained so much. Sorry, what? I'm saying you're weird, and the only thing to explain it is the fact that you're an alien.
That would be cool. Yeah. But I would be the most boring alien of all.
Yeah. Not all aliens are interesting, I'm afraid. But, alright then. It's time for a brand new episode of this manga podcast, which is totally a weekly podcast and totally is out when we say it is. Yeah. So, yeah, got anything interesting that happened to you this week?
Well, my spring break and all that.
Woo, spring break.
Spring break for a week.
I don't get spring breaks because I'm a working adult.
Not much really happened. Other than reading some books, I guess I've been into mythology lately. And it's funny we won this one of these, it wasn't mythology, that's an epic. I get to read through that, but then I started reading some mythologies, and I was looking through your Greek mythologies, and I'm like, oh, are this crazy, and what's the other ones are like?
Yeah.
Let's just say the creation of the Milky Way, the Greeks think of, is,
Wasn't that similar to, like, the way the Japanese think of it?
How did the Japanese think of the Milky Way being created?
I don't know if it's the Milky Way necessarily, but I do know that that one of their god's sperm creates something.
Oh, no, that this one's less disgusting. This one's more of one of the god's breast milk. Which is spat out by Heracles when he was a baby.
Wait, what?
Well, no, not spat out, but he was trying to suckle on Hera's nipple. And then she's like, wait, what the heck are you doing? Pulls him away, like, that's how the Milky Way is created.
What the hell?
Exactly. You don't want to know what, you don't want to know how the heck Hades got his bride.
Did it involve rape? It's the Greek, it's the Greek mythology. I'm hardly unaware of what the majority of the Greek mythology was about.
Yes, it does. It and Greek mythologies have lots of incest, which makes it very uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
If at all.
Well.
Although, I feel sorry for Hephaestus. How he caught his wife and his brother with each other. But the funny thing was that when he finally caught them, he said, hey, look, I'm going to keep you two like these forever. So basically, Aphrodite and Ares are both naked with trying to be each other, and he's like, I'm going to keep you like this forever. Like, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. He kind of was. Yeah, I've not been doing much myself except doing a little bit of work on trying to figure out how to do videos and such fun things, but...
Mythology is research anyway.
True. Yeah. I've been reading a lot recently. I've been reading the latest Terry Pratchett, which anyone that hasn't read that yet needs to read all the other Terry Pratchett books and then read the latest one.
Behind fantasy, right?
Like, yeah, he's the guy that does Discworld.
He wrote, was it The Seeker?
The what?
The Seeker, is that someone else?
That's Terry Brooks.
Oh.
Terry Pratchett is a comedic writer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His books are comedy, and they are amazing.
Well, I want to read some urban fantasy. Just Dresden Files.
His stuff gets kind of urban.
Something similar to that.
No, but seriously, read Terry Pratchett. He's amazing.
All right,
then. I think we're going to go ahead and talk about the news, because news about manga is more interesting than we are.
What? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like talking about myself. But...
Did you see the new Fairy Tale yet?
Which new one? Oh, the anime?
Yes.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, good point. No, that one I haven't watched because I'm not caught up on the anime, but I'm thinking, you know what, just start watching from here. Might as well. already know what happens in between when I stop watching and when the new anime is starting.
Start watching Kill la Kill too. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna give it a shot.
Yeah, I need to watch that one. I also caught up on the Nisekoi anime. And that one.
Yeah, that one
gets a lot better later on. I mean, it's a little rough at first, but as more characters get introduced, you get into the funnier moments, and the pacing is really good, and the facial expressions are really good. You know how a lot of times some things don't translate so well from manga to anime. In this case, they translate really well, and in a lot of moments, the voice acting really does help to sell the idea.
Yeah.
And let's see what else.
Just one thing to add, though, I don't think I'll ever be able to watch manga adaptations of anime. Because I just... It's not that I don't hate the anime adaptations of manga, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm already reading the manga. I don't feel like having to...
I mean, I kind of watch it from the point of view of... Yeah, the manga is better, but anime is a good way to get into new manga series. Seeing it and then going back to the original, but... And sometimes... I like to watch the, watch the anime just to see how it compares to the manga.
I'm too classic for you guys, and I like to read before I watch something.
I also was watching, the Kawaii Guide, Guide to Hostels and Things. I don't know. Watch the first episode of that because I'll confess, one of the character designs is like, hello?
It's a fetish for him.
A bit of a fetish, maybe, but I looked at that and I was like, this might look interesting. And it's kind of one of those typical series where it's, here's an apartment or here's a, basically a hostel. And here are all the characters that live there. It's very much in the veins of, not in the exact same veins. There's a lot more comedy and weirdness in this one. But it's very similar to, a Maison Ikkoku, Otaku no Musume-san. Except so far, not as soul-crushingly terrible as Otaku no Musume-san is. Though it does have one of the... It's kind of a... The basic idea is this kid, he wants to live on his own, and he keeps referencing how middle school was a disaster for him. And he's starting to high school. His parents moved away, so he's living on his own in this place. And he has roommates, basically. One is a girl that he saw in school. She's a year above him, and he's basically decided, this is the perfect girl that I would want to be my girlfriend. And she's the kind of, quiet, bookwormy type. And I'm thinking, all right, you got good tastes, my man. And then you have some other characters that we've been introduced to so far in the first episode. We've got him, the girl. We've got the landlady who's actually really fun because she's this kind of, not middle-aged but not old. She's kind of like, at the end of the middle age, of her middle age. So she's just about old enough to be a young grandma. And she's kind of like, her character design is basically that sort of the short, kind of chubby, older woman. But the way that she's written and the actress plays her, she's kind of really sassy. And it's, not sassy in like, no, you didn't kind of way, but more in a sort of, I guess a better word would be vivacious. She's very entertaining anytime she's on the screen while at the same time being the typical, hi, I'm the housekeeper character. And then you have his roommate, who, this may cause some problems, he is basically the bizarre hikikomori pervert.
Reminds me of someone I know.
Reminds me of someone from a manga that I absolutely hate, and he was one of the reasons I hated it. Except this guy is not like, he's not flat out a lolicon, it's more he's just, they play him more off as a masochist, basically. He's not like into being physically abused, but he does like when people verbally abuse him. That kind of gets him all hot and bothered, and it's really weird. So him and the landlady kind of, and the manager kind of have a weird interplay where he'll be like, she says like, "Oh, could you go buy some fish?" And he's like, "Say it more abusively," and she's like, "Go buy some fish, you dirty pig." And I'm just like, "Well, what the crap is going on?" So those two kind of play off together, and then you've got the one character, I forget her name, but she's the in her late 20s office woman who
You
is,
don't know her name yet. She's the reason why you're watching it.
I don't remember names, I just
You're
don't.
terrible.
I
You
don't care.
remember this size.
I do not. All I know, look, well, okay, look, when there are, I don't view chest sizes in manga in or anime in terms of what the actual cup sizes are. I'm starting to develop a scale that I use just based on, anime, a manga series. Like, I would say she's about a, she's like halfway between a Fairy Tail and a One Piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, her name is Mayumi Nishikino.
Right. I'm not gonna remember that.
Mayumi.
No, don't make me. But yeah, so she's basically the sexy glasses wearing office lady who's also has terrible luck with men and is kind of a, and turns out to be kind of a brat whenever she's depressed. So she's entertaining to say the least. And yeah, it's basically only seen the first episode so far, but it is, I kind of like the gathering of characters we have so far. It's, I don't know, we'll see where it goes, whether this story is actually any good or if I'll continue watching it, but so far I was entertained by the first episode at least. Let's see, what else? Some other anime that's come out. There's a lot of anime that I'm kind of need to get to. I'm really interested in that sumo wrestler anime.
Yeah, I kind of want to watch that too. Although it's kind of weird. I don't understand it
Yeah,
myself.
it looks kind of good. It looks kind of good. There's also the second season of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Let's see, the comic.
Second season?
Yes, it's the second season. Parts one and two are season one.
I thought you were referring to season three as in part three and.
No, yeah, it's technically the second season of the anime, but
Okay.
yeah, I need to catch up on that series again. And now all of the first half of season one are up on Crunchyroll, so I can watch those now finally. And let's see what else. Yeah, Fairy Tail Part Two, Series Two. There's the comic artist and assistants, which that one's a th has 13-minute long episodes. So I'm gonna check it out. I mean, I read the manga and it's kind of stupid, but I want to see what they do with the anime here. And that I've marked on my queue for re for watching. There's a bunch of ones that kind of look generically similar, with one called like Hero Bank, one Eureka Battle, another Dragon Collection. They seem very, I don't know, they're those typical sort of shonen action series for younger kids. Let's see, you've got Haikyuu and Baby Steps for
IQ is the one about volleyball, I think. It's
yep.
adapted off the manga itself. I mean, the manga that is based off of
Yeah,
that
the
song.
manga and Jump. But yeah, it and Baby Steps are your sports there. And technically, the rowdy sumo wrestler Matsutaro counts as a sports anime. Let's see, what of it? Brynhildr in the Darkness, which is seems like your typical sci-fi anime, but it also uses a Norse word in it, so I'm curious. Let's see what else. Captain Earth, another sci-fi. The
Grown
Irregular at
sci-fi.
Magic High School, which looks kind of like, fantasy. And what else? Seito Kai Yakuin Domo. I have no idea what that one is about, so I'll have to take a look at it. What else? Oh yeah, Disc Wars Avengers. Let's see if I can find that weird Avengers anime streaming somewhere, where it's basically all the Avengers heroes get caught in these discs that were meant to be used to trap supervillains. But then they run into these kids, and these kids are the only ones that can momentarily release them. So,
oh, yeah, that's weird. I'm like, wait, this reminds me of something I know.
It's like, it's basically Digimon with the Avengers, so it's so weird to see such a tired old concept be used with an existing property like that. It's bizarre. But I don't know, the idea doesn't sound completely ridiculous. Well, no, it sounds absolutely ridiculous, but, you know, it kind of sounds like something that could kind of work, except this whole idea of, hey, you're supposed to care about these kids more than the Avengers, you know?
Too bad.
Because they're the main characters, and yet at the same time, it'd be like watching Digimon after having decades of the Digimon on adventures, and then suddenly these random kids show up, and they're like, these are the main characters now. And it's like, what's going on here?
That was Digimon Season 4, I believe. The one was the one where they merged with the Digimon, and the Digimon never even existed from then on because the kids became the Digimon.
I have no idea which one that is.
It's the one people hated them. It's the one all the fans hated the most.
Again, all the fans I have no idea which one that is.
I don't know which one that was. I think it was season 4 or 5. I can't remember.
I stopped watching after the betrayal of Season 2.
I watched after I finished watching. I stopped watching after 3 because I couldn't find 4 anymore, so it probably was 4.
Hmm. I did watch parts of 3 because it was on TV, but I never really followed it.
Out of all the Mons, I prefer the Digimon anime to the Pokemon. Pokemon just...
Yeah.
It's like The Simpsons, but it just feels worse. So,
yeah, I like the Digimon.
Simpsons Unleashed has a reason why it's doing it, and you know, it's okay.
Yeah, the thing that works for Digimon in its favor versus Pokemon is that the stakes are higher. I mean, while the Digimon never actually die, and the kids aren't ever, you know, in any shown to be any mortal danger, it's still the stakes are a lot higher than in Pokemon, where there's not even a chance for them to fake die. They just fall unconscious. You know?
Yeah.
So it lacks that sense
especially
of danger.
In the game, they actually faint.
Yeah, pretty much. But
so and so fainted, but I can't catch it. No, it fainted. But
it's right there!
It's right there! No, you can't catch it.
It's what they do in the anime. Like, well, we've already proven the anime is inaccurate, but, yeah. Alright, there we go, okay, let's get into the actual news. Yeah, we went off topic. I mean, it's the beginning of a new anime series, anime season. It's an exciting time. Alright, Japanese comic rankings for March 24th to the 30th, starting in 10th place, Mo.
10th place is Moyashimon, Volume 13.
Oh. 9th place, Skip Beat, Volume 34.
8th place, Fairy Tail, Volume 42.
Only on 2 weeks, and it dropped lower than One Piece in its 4th week, which One Piece is in 7th place, Volume 73. Yeah.
6th place, Kagero Day, Volume 4.
5th place is Kobayashi ga Kawaii Sugite Tsurai, Volume 6.
4, Yokai Watch, Volume 3.
3rd place, Jojo Leon, Volume 6.
2nd place, Space Brothers, Volume 23.
1st place, Kimi ni Todoke, Volume 21. Alright, and it's time for the bestseller list for the New York Times. This one says April 13th. Is that right?
I actually found the original one. Yeah, this is the original one.
Yeah, the date seems off there.
This is this is basically, yeah, I don't know why it's for April 13th.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, yeah, speaking right now, this is April 6th. We're on the 8th right now, but I guess maybe this is this is weird. I guess maybe like April 6th, that was the Sunday, so that was for the previous week. So these are the rankings as they stand leading up to the 13th, so they'll probably change, I guess.
Probably, but this is current for now,
yeah.
I guess.
As current as we can get, so yeah. For this week as they are currently, or should we be talking about last week, you know? Since, you know, those are the ones that are completed and this one is still ongoing. Yeah,
True.
let's talk about last week, starting with 10th place, Blue Exorcist, Volume 11.
Okay, ninth place, March Story, Volume 5.
8th place, Attack on Titan Junior High, Volume 1.
7th place, Alice in the Country of Clover, March Hare.
6th place, Attack on Titan Volume 10.
5th place, UQ Holder, Volume 1.
4th place, Nisekoi, False Love, Volume 2.
3rd place, Attack on Titan, Volume 2.
2nd place, Attack on Titan, Volume 1.
1st place, Attack on Titan, Before the Fall, Volume 1. Why does it feel like we've read this before? Why does it feel like we read this before?
I don't know, this is confusing. Maybe we should just rely on the Anime News Network one.
Yeah.
But, oh well.
Well.
I don't know, it is, but it is confusing because this is for the stuff that was for the week of April the 6th. So leading up to April the 6th, which was, unless, none of this makes any sense. Anyway, moving on to North American anime and manga releases from March 30th to April 5th.
Okay.
Take it away, Mo.
Okay, here we go. Ain't
You started saying it,
April
you have to complete it.
Play DVD complete collection.
It's porn.
Shut
You know, I'm kind of thinking if now, great, now we're getting anime porn. If people
You
want,
think we haven't been getting it?
well, we've been getting it, but now it's at the top.
That's
But
at the top.
yeah, but you know, I mean, if people want the general public to take our creepy little hobby seriously, and it is freaking creepy if this is the first thing we see on the releases, then maybe we shouldn't be importing the porn, which everyone can get for free online anyway. So anyone that spends $15 on this is a moron.
Well, they don't have to worry about getting viruses on the computer.
No, they don't, but they have to worry about people seeing it sitting there with their DVDs.
Like, what are you gonna watch? Angel Blade. Ooh, that's nice.
Like, that is a good way to lose friends. All right, well.
Any new friend.
Yeah, wrong kind of friends. All right, we've got Dragon Ball Z Season 3 Uncut Blu-ray set. Tempt me not, you siren.
Okay, next one. Ebiten. Ibisugawa Public High School's Tenmonbu Blu-ray Complete Collection. I want to try to say that name properly. And DVD.
Oh yeah, where is this? Oh, it looks very moe, so I will avoid that. And yeah, and Happiness DVD Complete Collection.
Is that also moe?
Yes, it is.
Oh man.
I
That'd be
timed this
kidding.
perfectly.
I hate you. Mystery of the Necronomicon. Or DVD.
Yeah, it's a bit like a bit like Evil Dead, particularly that one scene. Okay, next one is Princess Nine DVD. Wouldn't it just be amazing if the story were just entirely about a princess who just goes around refusing every thing people propose to her? It's like, Princess, will you marry me? Nine!
Nice.
It just runs around with like a Hitler stash.
That'll be good for a one-off gag, but okay.
No! 24 episode series!
How would that even work?
Well, I don't know. You could do it kind of like that one idea that that they had that was on Tumblr, where it's basically this whole what they want to see is a main character in an anime who has like all the typical markings of a typical female anime lead, but she just ignores everything because she wants to avoid it as much as possible. And so she's like finds like this prince dying and on the street. He's like, "You must help me," and she just ignores him, or all this other stuff. I want to see if I can find that. But anyway, before we do that, yeah, next one.
Excellent. The third, The Girl with the Blue Eye, DVD collection. All right, it's your turn to start next.
No.
Yes.
All right, fine. Manga releases Alice in the Country of Clover Nightmare. That's not porn.
It's Alice in the Country of Clover. What the heck? Anyways, Bleach, Volume 60.
Dance in the Vampire of the Vampire Bund. Omnibus 5. Still not porn.
Victoria Grimoire, Red Riding Hood, Volume 3.
Dragon Ball, Full Color, Saiyan Arc.
Hanakimi, Volume 22-24, Omnibus.
You son of a bitch. Happy Marriage! Quesclamation point. This is one of the weird ones because it's all, this is for adults, but you look at it, it's like, that looks like a typical shoujo. Huh. Alright, next one.
Nice card. I want to read that. Anyways, Hunter x Hunter, Volume 32.
Library Wars, Love and War, Volume 11.
Oh, why did I have to read this one? Naruto, Volume 65.
Nura, Rise of the Yokai Clan, Volume 20.
That used to be such a good series, up to a certain arc. Anyways, Pokemon, Black and White, Volume 15.
Strike Witches, Maidens in the Sky.
Aha, you read a Moe title. Anyways, Sweet Rhine.
Creepy title.
Sweet Rhine.
Rain? I think it's meant to be Rain.
Sweet Rhine.
Sweet Rhine! Rein mit dir! Rein mit das Pipi!
Show you. reindeer.
Even more! Rein
mit das Pipi! What the heck is this?
Anyway. Rein? I think it's supposed to be rain, as in reindeer.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Maybe? So. I don't know. Let me look at that cover again.
No, it's probably Sweet Rain now, like you said.
Yeah, that's a Christmas outfit. That's meant to be Sweet Rain, as in reindeer.
Yeah.
Instead of reindeer! Which means
I swear, German just sounds freaking cool.
Mm-hmm.
I wish.
Well, it's really only if you add emphasis to it that would make actual Germans look at you like a lunatic. If you went around speaking German like this, ich werde essen das Kartoffel mit dem Rhein mit der Reindeer, sie geil. People would look at you like you're crazy, and then they'd punch you for the sie geil comment. Anyway, Toriko, Volume 21.
Okay, voiceover, Seiyu Academy, Volume 4.
Alright, and what else do we have? We have, oh man,
we have a lot of other releases. Okay, Battle Royale Slam Book, Essays on the Code Classic, Essay Collection. Why do you need an essay collection? Why do you need to buy an essay collection?
I don't know.
Okay, Battle Royale, Novel Remastered. Daisuke Moriyama Artworks, Chronicle Art Book. That's Amazon. That's released only on Amazon, apparently. Dragon's Dogma, Official Design Works Art Book, also released on Amazon. I want that game! Hatsune Miku, Graphics, Vocaloid Comic and Art, Volume 1 Art Book, also Amazon release. Ragnarok, Odyssey, Ace, PS for the PS3 Vita. And Stray Dog of Anime, the Films of Mamoru Oshii. Revised edition.
Woo!
Oh, Ragnarok Odyssey, huh? What's that?
I don't know. Let's see. Yokai War. Interesting. Alright then. What other news do we have, Mo? We have quite a bit there.
Yeah, we have quite a bit. Okay, so Jigoku Sensei Nyume Neo manga series is going to start in May. So apparently the one shot was that good that they decided to start off with the actual series again.
Weird. Yeah, that's what happened with Genshiken in the second season. It was originally just going to be a little celebratory extra chapter, you know? Mm. But then they started a whole new series. So, I'm not surprised. I mean, heck. If they did this, okay. If this is the beginning of a trend, I will sacrifice an innumerable number of chickens if it means that Ghost Sweeper Mikami gets a special one-shot that then becomes a full manga. And granted, there was a recent special one-shot that did not become a new series, which kind of pissed me off, but do it again!
Take two. Which one?
Ghost Sweeper Mikami.
Oh, there was a one-shot on it?
Yeah, it was kind of one of those. It was a little weird because it wasn't like a sequel. It was more just that this happened, could have happened at any point later on in the manga. So
that's a weird one shot.
Yeah, if they had done an actual sequel, manga chapter, I bet that they would have gotten him to continue. But, you know,
if they had done that, then it would have been a green light for saying, hey, we're actually going to do this.
Yeah, well, it would have, you know, he still needs to finish Zettai Karin Children, so after he finishes that, maybe I'll get lucky.
So yeah, so the sequel of Jigoku Sensei Nubei will pretty much start on May, will pretty much be serialized on May 28th.
Cool. Mm-hmm. If I had have read the original series, that would be something memorable, but it's Thank not available. Alright, next bit of news, what do we got?
Comic Walker app adds Nagata Yuki-chan Love Live and Angel Beats manga along with a couple other titles I won't name.
Cool.
Guys, you go look it up yourself, folks.
I'm going to look it up and see if that's your subtle way to say, Derek, don't look at this. It will piss you off.
This is not what you think it is. It's just too much stuff to name. I don't even know what indies okay. are, to be honest.
Angel Beats, Love Live, and Air I see test. Yeah, nothing that pisses me off. Okay, carry on.
Okay, next news. 30th Annual Kodansha Manga Awards nominees have been announced. Some of these have been nominated are Nagare Boshi Land, Noragami, and Hozuki no Reketsu.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah, I don't know any of these series. I love these toys on them. Yay!
I thought this was Kodansha.
I don't understand. Really? Oh, it's just special. Oh, sorry, best shown in manga. Sorry.
Like okay.
Best shown manga. Best shown in manga. Best shoujo manga. Best ranking. Best general manga. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's called Dante. Why? Is it cool? Well, I guess it's probably what? Then again. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure did somehow, you know, get, you know, picked up by by Crunchyroll, which is kind of linked to Kodansha in a way, but I'm confused.
Wait, the manga? No, that's the anime.
It's the anime? I'm confused now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty sure they don't have the manga, because that's kind of Shonen Shueisha. Let me check, actually. Yeah. Latest stuff, rumors of action, rumors of fate. Yeah, no, I don't see any other stuff here. So, alright, well, carry on.
Okay, so the Dragon Ball Bonus Story is going to run Visit Shonen Jump on Monday, just today.
Oh, yes. I haven't read it yet, but I will.
I read it. I was like,
It basically, tells the story of what happened before Goku came to Earth, and I'm kind of looking at it and thinking, he's like, ooh! Yes, please.
You gotta read it. You would like to see his parents.
Oh, really? So we get to see his mom for the first time. You know what? Screw the news. I know what I needed to be doing right now.
Hey, get the news first, okay?
All right, fine. Carry on.
Okay, so GTO's Toru Fujisawa writes Ayami no Kami manga.
Okay.
I think that's the one where the guy meets... Wait, this looks from... Oh, yeah, okay. So basically, it's about some guy who meets a beautiful girl claiming to be God. So... Basically, main character dates God.
Interesting.
Nothing new. nothing to see here, folks. Nothing new.
Yeah.
It's my favorite GTO, so that's pretty interesting.
Okay, cool. Alright, what else? So this one, next one looks interesting.
Attack on Titan is number 5 on US bookstores in March. They don't see what's number 1.
Is this as of everything, or just...
It's as of March.
Or is this including just comics?
I don't... Well, it seems just... Might just... It might just be... Wait, it might just be... No, I'm not on top of it.
Oh.
That's a problem.
Wait.
Graphic novels.
Oh, just graphic novels?
Graphic novels.
That's pretty impressive. Pretty very impressive, I must say. Alright, what else do we have?
Hey, Himawari Musei no Setsuoni creator launched new manga. Sorry, I didn't get the name at all. The premise of the story sounds interesting to me. It reminds me of this one Don Don Ropa thing. And that's a weird one. I don't understand that one either. And then the first series I've been announced to. It's not happening, maybe.
Just leaving a bit of silence because I'm going to have to cut this out anyway. Makes it easier for me.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Yeah, one sec. Okay. 3, 2, 1. All right. Sorry about the little interruption there, folks. Let's carry on.
Okay, next news is Google Cultural Institute unveils Osamu Tezuka collection online.
Should take a moment to look at that, I think. Looks interesting. But, okay.
It's an online museum, I guess.
Hmm? Like it. Yeah, I don't know. It kind of looks like it has
270 items, including images, photographs, and videos from Tezuka's works and life.
Interesting. Looks like it might be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Also, today, I mean, April 7th, 2003 is Martin's birthday, the robot Astro Boy.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
I'm guessing when he wrote Astro Boy, he made 2003 as like the so-called future year. Futuristic year, and also 2003 comes by like, thank you for about this.
Like, no. No, that did not happen. Sadly enough. Oh, well.
I blame the government. Anyways, moving on. Okay, three mangakas are starting a new manga each. The mangaka Cage of Eden, Codebreaker, and Gurazemi authors each launch a new manga.
I know which one to avoid. I did not care for Cage of Eden.
Yeah, the Cage of Eden is called Deathtopia. The second is called UK movie QG. Why the it's a short comedy? Okay. Mm. And third one is series. Okay, they all know the name for that one apparently.
Oh, okay.
Alright. The next one is called Girl Motorbike Love.
Interesting. Alright, let's see. North America. Okay. Alright, fair enough. Okay, and I think we have one last bit of news here.
We do? Oh, yeah, we do.
Yeah. Kind of a... Well, just a thing that we can mention that people should check out. It's just, Hiromaya.
Yeah, my son's a robot. He's a robot.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, dude won't stop drawing. Even when some people say he should, he won't stop. But yeah, he's got... Yeah, he drew a bunch of, characters and other stuff, sort of, of some of the characters from the Bisatsu Shonen magazine, which includes Attack on Titan, very clearly.
I don't know who the heck is in the very front.
I do not know who that is. I do not read enough manga from there. But I do see Arslan from that Hiromu Arakawa manga.
I think there's Flowers of Evil there, too.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. Then other ones, I have no idea.
Sangria the Zombie is probably to the very far left.
Okay, that one's on the left. Okay, right. Okay, cool. Okay, that was all, I believe, wasn't it? All right, excellent. Well, that does it for the news for this week, and we've gone a little longer than normal because we're not all passing out from tiredness. So, excellent. Let's take a quick break, and then we will move on to the reviews for this week. And we'll see you all there.
See you all there.
It's time for the review for this episode, and this week we are covering 4 volumes of manga, of which one is the newly released 7 Deadly Sins Volume 1. We've discussed this manga before, mostly as a kind of general overview, but now we are, with our somewhat new format, we are going to approach this series the way we approach all series, volume by volume as they are legally released in the U.S. So, and we will also be covering volume 16, 17, and 18 of One Piece, which covers the rest of the Drum arc and brings us into the beginning of the Alabasta arc. So, starting things out, we will start with Seven Deadly Sins. And I will give a quick synopsis. Our main character is Meliodas, a young boy who, it later turns out, is actually a knight, or a former member of a now criminal society of knights called the Seven Deadly Sins. And he is approached by he is approached by the Rust Knight, who turns out to be Elizabeth, the princess of the kingdom, who realizes that the holy knights that serve her father are actually evil, and so she has come to find the seven deadly sins who were once loyal to her father and bring them back to help.
Holy evils, Batman.
Pretty much, yeah. But yeah, pretty much decide like, hey, we're gonna, you know, we I will need your help to save my kingdom. And Meliodas, the former leader of the group, decides to join up with her. And together they run into several holy knights who are quite powerful. Except then it turns out they are not.
They're just knights who have some kind of
A
power.
bit of magic, yeah. But it turns out that Meliodas stands up to his, you know, reputation of a legendary knight when he is completely unbeatable for quite a while. Turns out he's also a massive pervert because he's constantly groping Elizabeth, but the weird thing is, she, for the most part, doesn't seem to care.
She doesn't, yeah, she doesn't seem to resist.
Yeah. So, and there's also kind of the funny. Yeah. Although. Yeah, oh, what was it? Let's see. There is a funny moment, what? You know. Yeah, so she's like, oh, they're calling you criminals, but what were you. What crime did you commit? And then Meliodas is like, 10 years ago, I stole the undergarments of women all across Britannia. And she is like, are you making things up? And he says, I am. The truth is, I went around groping the breasts of over 1,000 young ladies. And she's like, you're kidding me. I am. But, yeah, he
He is a
basically.
shameless pervert.
Yeah, except in kind of a weird blasé way. Like it's really weird. Like it's more there just because that's what, you know, that's how shonen protagonists act. Or well, no, they don't act like that. But you know, it's kind of weird because, you know, for the most part, his character is nothing like your typical pervert. And yet at the same time, it really feels like his heart isn't in it, even though he's constantly doing it. You know, groping. Elizabeth. It's almost like, you know, he's playing an act. He's putting on a false face, you might say.
Problem.
So, there is something he has hidden. But,
So you think he's just pretending to be a pervert?
well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but it certainly does feel like, you know, I mean, especially later on, he kind of basically just abandons the whole I'm a pervert sort of like, you know, behavior. And you just kind of have to wonder, huh, I wonder why exactly. But yeah, so they kind of, let's see, yeah, they kind of continue on where they keep running into other knights, you know, holy knights. It turns out they're actual big jerks. And they're kind of specifics not really necessary. I mean, we don't want to give anything away, but they do in particular run into one knight called Gil Thunder, who has the power of electricity and is basically keeping a village from accessing their water.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have a really cool scene where he throws a spear and then Meliodas catches it and throws it right back at him into his tower.
Like, here, have your spear back, jerk.
And then as they're traveling by, they get to a forest where there's like these creatures that are disguising themselves as people, and Meliodas, of course, manages to, you know, get the better of them by having the all the fake Elizabeths do a bunch of erotic things for him. And even and Elizabeth even goes along with it, even to the point of groping herself when asked. But when it comes to jumping up in the air and exposing her panties, that she cannot do. So, odd sense of priorities there.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, but then it's discovered that, hey, the these creatures are working for the sin of...
Envy.
Envy. Diane, a giant, who also happens to be the one of I don't even know if she's really the token fan service character, because that's kind of Elizabeth's shtick. But she's kind of like the token love, not love interest, but token I'm in love with the main character chick, who in the end it will turn out that, you know, she's not the main the character's main love interest. I kind of hate those characters, you know, sometimes. Just because they're always like, oh, I love the main character, I love the main character, this is my entire character trait. Oh no, the main character loves this, the girl that's the actual female lead. Now, what am I to do?
It's okay. A good thing Rin won for once.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to go love someone else now. I was like, gosh darn it, stop that. But she is pretty entertaining. She has some pretty massive mood swings where she just pummels the earth with Meliodas in it because, you know, she's like, oh, you cheater, you're cheating on me with her. And then Meliodas is like, what? No, I'm not. And then she believes him. And then you discover that the reason the seven deadly sins are being hunted is because they came across the captain of the Holy Knights, who had been very graphically murdered, I might say.
Even murdered, skewered, murdered, stabbed, skewered with all sorts of pointy objects.
He's pretty much crucified.
Yeah, that.
Upon many, many spears that have been driven through him. And the seven deadly sins are, you know, they're all kind of take the blame for it.
Because they're there. It's like, oh, you killed him. Wait, we didn't kill. Oh, this Romulus' memory, and the other thing he remembers that there was someone, one of them saying, oh, I'm sorry, Captain. Mm-hmm. So, pretty much, out of the seven deadly sins, one of them has betrayed them.
You kind of have to wonder why. Who could it be? We'll have to wait to find out until we meet them all. And then we kind of end the volume with Diane being and Meliodas being trapped by Gil Thunder's lightning, which I guess binds them. And now they are left to face him as he is approaching, and they are kind of stuck. So you're wondering, how will they get out of this one?
Actually, this volume was very interesting because there was a page in one of the chapters which is going to come back to hit us way in the future. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say, but I'm just going to say it's gonna come back at you in the face when you know this. If you pay attention.
I'm not even sure I know what you mean. But, alright.
I'm not going to say, but yeah.
Alright, fine. I'll beat it out of you later. Alright, so, first volume of The Seven Deadly Sins. Now, anyone that's been listening to this podcast knows we like this series. But, from the first volume, what is our opinion of it, just from one volume in? Say this was the first time we'd read it. Let's role-play someone new to this series. What appeal is there for them here?
You like knights?
I like knights.
Do you like magic?
I like magic.
Do you like whimsical adventure with knights and magic?
I don't know how that has anything to do with this. We did see a man skewered upon many spears, but okay, sure.
Oh, wait.
No.
Well, this got my interest when I first saw it.
Well, yeah, it
does. Because I remember you talking about some years back saying, hey, I always, there was some more fancy manga that, you know, had to do with Western Knights and stuff or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Berserk. With Berserk being the only fantasy manga out there, of Western based.
Well, not the only one, but definitely the most well known.
One of the better ones.
And a little bit hard to access, you know, because it's Unless you don't mind meeting, reading massive rape orgies every five chapters, you may not like this series. Just saying. But yeah, I think yeah, ugh. I think
Hold
the
on to that.
Seven Deadly Sins is interesting that it stands out as one of the few shonen manga that I've seen that takes the aesthetic of a Western fantasy and actually, runs with it. I mean, it's definitely, stylized in the way, in the way that you see often from a Japanese artist. A lot of the armor is very impractically designed, even if it is straight up, it is following sort of like the Western medieval sensibilities. And the swords are all definitely European styled, but at the same time, they have that little extra something to make them not look like your typical swords. Like maybe the there's a maybe the tip is kind of like sawtooth, or the there's like weird waves on certain parts of the blade, and or maybe just kind of in general the tip being shaped other than the pointy end, And so let's see.
There's a name for those kinds of. There's a name for these two, for these, for one of these type of Japanese sort of a wave edge to them. I don't know what's called. It's called a minareba.
Well, and I mean, you had the Flamberge sword, which had actual wavy edges, so it's not unreasonable to imagine. It's just kind of weird how many of them don't just have a freaking normal tip for no reason. But that's a minor nitpick that I only have because I'm a complete nerd for medieval weapons and art and all
He just
that.
stores on top of him.
Pretty much, yeah. But yeah, like for example, the sword that he pulls out of the ground, it's kind of basically shaped like a standard sword. It's got a long hilt with a pommel, a little small for a pommel, but it also has a bit of a sort of like a little bit of a kind of a flare. Like an inward outward flare on the blade, where or kind of like, well, it start the blade at the bottom is narrower than at the top than the rest of the body, so that's kind of a that is something that you do see a bit, especially in like a lot of later Scandinavian swords, long swords and bastard swords. But then it's kind of got this odd bit at the tip, where the last I'd say probably foot, half a foot of the blade kind of has a bit, not really a sawtooth pattern, but it's kind of, how you, like somebody had cut half, sort of like stretched out half circles from like parts of the blade there. So
People
they,
wait-ish.
yeah, kind of wavish, thorny looking. Yeah, it kind of looked like thorns a lot. So you kind of have to wonder, is like, okay, I wonder what the purpose of that sword being designed like that is. I don't think it would cut any better, but at the same time, it looks like a pretty standard Western sword. So,
For you, it's not about how the sword is, it's about how well the sword can be used.
well, yeah, but I'm just kind of saying it in general. It's really nice that they go that it goes all the way. It takes a certain design sensibility and sticks to it. It's not like, say, for example, Escaflowne, where the where they did this weird combination of mostly Western costume designs. With some exceptions, but a lot of the countries had very Western influenced costume designs, and the Meliffs in that series definitely had a very West sort of Western knight armor design. And even the Meliffs used regular Western style swords, but for some reason the humans all fought with curved blades that didn't quite have like katana hilts, but the blades themselves were curved, and I was just kind of thinking, that's
Yeah, I
like
see
kind of
it.
odd.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, so like this is a Western design, but you can't give up the curved swords, can you? But we all, and we have also like for example, One Piece, where they're going for the Age of Piracy kind of design, at least early on. And there are a lot of guys with the kind of cutlasses that you would see in that kind of time period. But then, for some reason, Zoro has katanas, even though you're just like, wait, why does he have those? Where did those come from? And why does barely anyone else have those? Or why is it always the best sword fighters that have those instead of a cutlass? This is, okay, whatever. I mean, it's written by a Japanese guy. I think we know why. But it is very nice to see this. You know, it doesn't go like, oh, I want to have like all my characters wearing cool armor like knights, but all the swords are going to be curved because curved swords are better, obviously, even though curved swords would be absolutely useless against anyone wearing full plate armor. But nah, nonetheless, I.
Some are curved swords over straight-edge swords, I guess. You know, I mean, I think just about the appearance, but it's about how well they can be used.
Well,
From what
yeah,
I've
but.
seen here, someone from what I've read here, a curved sword is easier to take out than it is from a straight sword would be, straight-edge sword would be. You
Well,
know, with the whole, you know, with the whole EI style drawing of the sword in one motion and cutting in one motion.
yeah, but imagine this scenario. You have a bunch of guys in full European plate armor, wielding katanas for some reason because it's a manga, and they use the EI strike, the quick draw, and they cut their opponent. What exactly do you think is going to happen?
It's not gonna work, and there's me like just stabbing the face.
Yep, it's going to. It is not going to work at all because a katana can't freaking cut plate armor. It will graze the armor, or maybe it will be stopped cold, and the knight and the guy wearing the armor will then strike with his own katana for some reason, and then that will not cut the armor worn by the other knight, and they'll both be like, "What? Why are we using these?" He's like, "Just give me a warhammer, dang it."
And a spike with our fist and
Pretty much, they
a
would.
duel of fisticuffs, bro.
Pretty much, they would throw their swords away and just start wrestling, and they'd be getting their not daggers out and try to stab each other. But nonetheless, I like that this series can stick with the medieval design. It's not your tip. It doesn't. It's kind of interesting. It very much looks in places like your typical Western fantasy, but there are some other parts that definitely feel like. You know, this isn't your typical Western fantasy because it does have a lot of the elements that it's bringing with it from manga, since it is a manga. So, you know, it kind of goes a little bit, oh, hey, this is the general design sense, but at the same time, you know, a lot of the writing style and the humor of it is very much a, it's very much manga. And so, yeah, I definitely like it. I definitely like it a lot, especially after just this first volume, rereading it, since this is one of those series that I have not reread since I started reading it a while back. And I must say that, yeah, I definitely must say this is highly recommended to anyone that's interested in in something that is kind of the standard in Western, in Western fantasy, but at the same time, it's not all that common in manga. So it's kind of a nice little take on the whole concept, and definitely recommended. I will say that Meliodas may and Elizabeth as main characters may be a bit, they may not be everyone's cup of tea this early on in the series. Because Meliodas has a pretty laissez-faire attitude in general and doesn't really get worked up about anything. So,
Give a about anything.
pretty much, yeah, not your standard shonen protagonist, certainly. But this does, so that might jar some people the wrong way, but definitely worth a read, I think.
Well, considering that he was the captain,
Well,
it
he
would
is.
make sense with his personality.
Yeah, it would definitely make a lot more sense that he's a lot more, he is, well, not only aloof, but also responsible. And so, yeah, but, all right, let's move on. We've got three more volumes of manga to talk about, starting with One Piece Volume 16. Okay, Mo, tell us quickly what happens in this volume.
Okay, so volume 16. Excuse me. Okay, so we last left off with the avalanche happening, and Luffy and Sanji are trying to escape the avalanche. And of course, Sanji reminds Luffy that, anything they can do, even if you're trying to like block an attack, it will Nami still take the field of force of it. So Then at some point, Sanji gets Luffy out of the way, and then he gets swallowed by the avalanche, and Luffy finds Sanji, saves him, and then right after that, he saves this one Lapin that was like down in the snow, and it was gonna help him out later, just very soon, because Wobble shows up. Douche King. He's like, "What are you doing here? This is my kingdom." And Luffy's like, "Oh man, not you again. Get out of my way. I don't want to deal with you." And he's like, "You can't ignore me." And of course, Luffy really can't fight him because now he has to deal with not just Nami but Sanji as well, who's unconscious. And I have to say, okay, I'll get to that part later on, but Luffy tries to avoid finding Wapo and his men, and then eventually the Lapin as he helped him out because, he helped that one Lapin's parent out of the snow, and he's like, okay, whatever, we'll help him out. And, yeah, and then after that, Luffy leaves them to fight Wapo, and he starts climbing the mountain. And supposedly it took him 3 hours to climb that mountain. So this is the part where I would say that if since Sanji and Nami were both sleeping, wouldn't they be dead in the cold? Comatose and all. Sanji's comatose.
Well, that is true. The being passed out in the snow. There is, well, it's One Piece. People don't die when it's not yet.
People don't die unless it really matters to the story. Anyways. So yeah, Luffy reaches the top, and then just before he falls down to his death because of the cliff breaking off, he's saved by some humanoid-ish person. Dear. Anyways, then back down on the ground floor, Vivi and Usopp rendezvous with Zoro, who got lost as usual.
Ah, well, Usopp. I mean,
And then.
Zoro. Oh, yeah, also, wait. Oh, yeah, there was also the part with, Usopp's face getting punched and swollen up.
It's just kept slapping him.
Yeah, she's just
because
like,
I don't
ah!
sleep.
He's
Because
like,
I'm
don't go to sleep! Slaps up, and later on, he's like, his face is all swollen up. Is just, hey, why does my face hurt? And so, yep. All right,
also
then.
Zoro shirtless in the cold. He's like, and I'm looking at him like, ha, great. Zoro did it before you did. Anyways. So yeah, we cut back to Nami, who's just getting cured by Kureha, Dr. Kureha, and her helper Chopper, and we learned that the cause was something called Kasha, which is an extinct disease that was supposedly extinct, except, and then it was like, oh, I remember why I got it. Yeah, Little Garden. It must have been when she exposed herself after the fire. And the bug bit her or something.
And I did kind of like that moment in the like I think they did it well in the anime where she was just like, "Have you been walking around topless in some kind of tropical island?" And I mean, he's like, "What? No. Oh." It was just kind of really well done.
Hasn't learned her lesson later on, though, apparently. Well, hopefully he doesn't get sick again. It won't happen again anymore, but. Yeah, so Luffy, wakes up too, and he tries to create Kureha, and Kureha's like, "No, I'm not going with you." And then somehow this is the part that kind of got my interest, where Nami was the first to ask Chopper to join the Straw Hats first. Not,
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
but it was only because she needed a doctor. She didn't want to stay there long enough.
That is true, but yeah.
Yeah. It was like, okay, like, connection. Anyways, so we moved back to Zoro helping the townspeople dig Dalton out of the snow. He kicks, it was that one funny moment where he just beat a soldier up and he was like, ah, clothes. It was like, he's beating up for clothes.
Yeah, that there were a lot of good, really funny and dramatic moments in
And
this
then
volume.
we get to the meat of this volume, the very huge meat. The past of Choppers, of his meeting with a very important person to him, Dr. Hilulu. Hilulu. Hilulu.
Hiruluk. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so old people being badasses generally. And yeah, so Dr. Hilulu helped him out. We learned before then Chopper was like, just an outcast, even by his own kind.
Because he was part human and part reindeer, so...
Not his fault he accidentally ate the human-human fruit.
Yeah, what are the odds?
I just thought. Like, this is delicious. Well, so I can talk now. I can walk. I can... My nose is still blue. Yeah. And then, somehow we cut to another flashback with Finn where Dalton attended a world meeting. And there was a younger Vivi there. Too. And the part where Waffle hit her, I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna kick his ass. But then he's like, it's okay, I'm okay. And then, somewhere else he was crying. I was like, ouch, man.
Yeah, it's like, dude, you douchebag.
I was like, you hit a little girl, you douchebag. King. Anyways. And we come back to the point where Chopper kind of unknowingly killed. Well, he didn't, he was unknowingly about to kill, Dr. Hewlett, foster father, wasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Foster father, yeah. But then Hewlett's like, don't worry, I won't die, and he brings that explosive socket that kills him within, like, before the poison can kill him instead. And I was like, damn. Seriously, Waffle was a huge jerk in this entire volume, even in the past. And I love it when Dalton at the near very end, that flashback said, "A crazy person can't be cured. You can't be cured." I'm like, wow.
Yeah, there's no medicine for stupidity.
There's no medicine for stupidity. And then it ends with Luffy punching Waffle in the present. And I was like, yes, that was glorious.
That was, yeah, that flashback, that, the framing for that flashback was brilliant. You start the flashback right before Luffy's punch lands and end it after seeing exactly how much of a freaking douchebag Waffle is. You end the flashback right as the dude is getting pummeled in the face.
Yeah, this is what one of the things Oda is known for, the so-called emotional punches.
Oh gosh, why? Oh my gosh, this one makes me cry.
Run into a bit more of these.
Yeah, Chopper. It's like, oh yeah, and it's just like Dr. Hewlett, oh no, and yeah, and just the whole speech of, you know, it's like, when does a man die? It's like, you know. Is it, you know, when he's shot in the heart with a pistol? When he's stricken with a deadly disease? When he eats soup made from a deadly mushroom? No, it's when he is forgotten. Yeah. And you're just like, oh. And then you've got Dalton who's just sobbing when he hears that. And then Hiruluk blows himself up by drinking exploding sake. Apparently this is a thing in the One Piece world.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, this is like... I think this is the, I don't know, this one was one of the first flashbacks that really hit you hard. I mean, Nami's flashback definitely hit you hard, but this was the first flashback for a character that we'd only just met this arc, and already we're just, why? You know, we didn't have the, the whole build-up of, this is Nami. We like her. This is her sad past. Feel sad. Well, this one, it's like, oh, by the way, here's Chopper. Also, here's his past. Why? Yeah, definitely. Man, that volume. Oh, man. That. Honestly, I'd almost say, you know, if someone's going to say, okay, I want to read One Piece, but I don't want to start from the beginning, show me one volume to read and...
This is the volume. Then, read it.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just like,
wait, where's something one. Avalanche? Read it.
Yeah, it's just like, just read. Read from here. Oh, my gosh.
It starts from the Avalanche, right as the Avalanche is started, but it ends with the punch by Luffy. That is the best way to end a volume.
Yep. It is pretty amazing. And speaking of which, let's start talking about Volume 17.
Go ahead.
All right, then. So, we continue with Waffle being sent flying by Luffy. And we begin the battle where Luffy and Waffle and Marimo and what's his face?
Komarimo.
The one guy is Marimo, and then the other one is
Wait, his name is Mario? Just Mario?
I think so. Wait, is it just Marimo? Oh, you know, I'm not sure. Let me check the character list. We've got. Oh no, it is Kurumarimo and Chess. So Kurumarimo being the one with the afro and the afro fists, which is like,
Gonna see
gee.
those afros again later on, trust me. We'll
Yeah, I
see.
know. It's like, gee, do you think Oda likes afros? But yeah, and they fight. They end up, they fight Sanji and Chopper, and while Luffy fights Wapol, and they kind of do their whole thing with a sort of the pairing up, but at the same time, they're not. It works a lot better because even though they do pair up a bit, the fights are still all intermixing with Wapol getting involved, Luffy getting involved, and it really works well together. And you have the two of them. You have Kuromarimo and Chess combined into Chess Marimo. And it's just like you're just riding piggyback. And yeah, and then yeah, you kind of
And yet they speak at the same time.
Yeah, which is like, what? But yeah, and you've got you basically have continue with Wapol being a huge douche, shooting down the flag, and then Luffy going after the flag that was Dr. Hyrlux. And keeping it up, and they kind of he just plants it, and there everyone's moving towards the castle while the fights continue. And the fight goes on for quite a good bit with basically Luffy and Wapol kind of like chasing each other, running away. And Wapol deciding is like, I'm gonna eat all the weapons and become a super weapon. And then that doesn't work, and then he tries to shoot his cannon, but because it's old, it doesn't work.
The
And he's like,
moment
yeah.
that
Yeah, the moment that what?
the moment when Waffle's like, "Wait, where's my key?" He's like, and then he just looks, there's a movie, Luffy just stare back, and he's like, and then he
Yeah,
shot.
he's just like, I'm not finished yet. You got Nami's like, oh, so that's what this was for? Well, that's boring. And yeah, and then Luffy, of course, just completely defeats Wapol and just flattens him. And by the time everyone gets up there, Wapol's gone. And Chopper is, saying, I'm not gonna go with you, but then Korea chases him out and is like, you're going with them. And they set up what Dr. Hiruluk was working on all this time, which was setting up, which was creating a mixture that would mix together with the snowflakes and turn them pink and make them look like cherry blossoms. And it was just like, okay, yeah, cherry blossoms, cool. But yeah, and it basically makes for a really great visual in in the anime.
It was.
And then we end the sort of like end things
I
up.
saw
We've
it three
got
times.
yeah, yeah, we've got we've got some of the people that are like, oh yeah, there was a pirate that came through, said if Luffy comes through we should tell him he's gonna be waiting for him at Alabasta. And it was like, who is this strange person? But we move on where they're all moving toward, they're all celebrating and everything, but they're moving towards Alabasta. And we cut to Alabasta where we meet Sir Crocodile, the savior of the people who basically kills pirates, protects everyone, can be stabbed, but does not die. So,
We'll find out why.
yeah, this dude is a bad A. And then, and oh, I love the moment that sort of like, as we're just the last couple pages, but you've got Usanji's like, hey, do you know anything about what happened to all our food? He's like, I loaded the ship with enough food to last us all the way to Alabasta. So how did it disappear in one night? And Luffy's just like, no, I don't know anything. And he's like, don't try to fool me. Your face doesn't lie. And he's like, oh, hey, what's that in your mouth? And he's like, it's food. You got Luffy who just gets beaten up while you've got Karu, Chopper, and Usopp just sitting there fishing, being as nonchalant as possible, all with food stuffed in their mouth and the caption box reading equally guilty. And I'm just like, ah, oh, you jerks! It wasn't just Luffy all along. And let's see, where do we go? Get some more talk, kind of like Vivi telling them, oh, hey, yeah, this is. This is what I want to do. This is how to save my kingdom. This is how Baroque Works is organized. With, you've got all the ones that we've already met, and you've got the agents. You've got Mr. One and Miss Doublefinger. You've got Mr. Two Bon Clay, who does not have a female partner because he doesn't want one. Hint, hint. And then, yeah, Miss ends the volume with them saying, like, you know, all the remaining officers will come together. And you get a whole doom panel with all of them heavily shaded and, yeah, looking all menacing. So that was volume 17, where we get the sweet, sweet payoff of Wapple getting completely beat up. And then we move on to the beginning of the final arc in the Alabasta saga with the Alabasta arc.
And it is the Alabasta arc, so it's the Alabasta arc.
Mm-hmm, yeah, well, I'd say the Alabasta saga is basically, you know, what, from the when they enter the Grand Line until, you know, they get to Crocodile. So that's the... Yeah, that's the Alabasta saga, as I think of it. But yeah. Oh. All right, then. So, volume 17. What do you what do we think of that one?
I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's part of that really strong part of One Piece where, you know, this is where we haven't really gotten into the really crazy stuff later on, but it is still one of the really strong parts of the story that a lot of people remember. Wapol is kind of a bit of a sort of filler character in a way, but at the same time, his his story is a lot better with Chopper than I realized the first time I read it. Not one of my favorites the first time I read it, but subsequent rereads make that arc make me enjoy that arc a lot more, especially in the payoff and everything. And then as we move on to Alabasta, which is easily one of the best big arcs and the first really big arc that we get introduced to.
It was so good. They made a movie based off the arc,
which was not so good.
And then after that one, they did a movie based off the drum arc, which is a lot better. Because yep. Oda was behind it.
Yep. Pretty
well, not
much.
Behind it, like, directly.
More involved.
But
yeah, I need to watch that one. Actually, I need to watch all of the One Piece movies. Just kind of, yeah, get through them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I
keep saying, don't watch it, but you haven't seen it. How would you know?
Well, I know about it, but, you know. Anyway, yeah, we're not here to talk about movies. But so, overall, this volume is just really great. It has a lot, you know, you get the payoff of everything that with Chopper's story, but you also manage to get the get the information, you know, the crucial information, and in this part where everything that is being said by them, even in the chapters that just have talking, is really interesting. So it's a lot of fun to read. And yeah, just definitely great and kind of a really good, just, you know, I mean, this is one of those volumes where not necessarily the greatest place for someone to jump on, but it is really, you know, but it is really good with, you know, wrapping up everything and starting the next volume, the next arc, I mean. And so, all right, speaking of which, let's go into the last volume we're going to talk about today, One Piece, Volume 18.
Okay.
Take it away.
Before arriving in Alabaster, they reach the seas of Alabaster, and after dealing with some sort of sea cat thing, and that they were going to try and eat, and Deep's like, don't eat that. You shouldn't eat that. And he's like, oh, okay. So, yeah, that goes away, and then they end up trying to fish or something, and they end up fishing someone named Bon Clay.
Who is easily one of the greatest characters this series has ever produced.
Yeah. And they happen to get along very well, and we learn about Bon Clay's devil fruit power, which is Mane Mane, which is like a... What does Mane Mane translate to anyway? Hand Hand? Right?
I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
I think so. Hand fruit. And basically he could like take his right hand, touch anyone's face with it, and then he could just and then touch his right face and then it was he easily just change his face to like that person, even their physique too. The villain Nami was funny. He was like, wait, don't do that. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing where he's just like, and even the body and he flashes, you know, Luffy, Usopp, and Chopper. And Yeah, the beginning of the so-called bad influence that Usopp has on Luffy. And
so called. He's already been having bad influence before. He just doesn't want to deal with it at the moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, then after that, right after Bonkley leaves, they learn that he was Mr. Two. Because one was missing, Mr. Two, we were looking for you. Like, oh, okay, I'm here, my pretties. I'm like, wait, what? He was.
Yes.
Yeah. And then Zoro's like, don't worry, this is actually a good thing. We have a countermeasure for this now. And their countermeasure was to wrap some sort of bandage around each of their arms so they can tell who's who. And that becomes like a symbol of their friendship, their fight in a way too, anyway. Mm-hmm. And then they arrive, and then on Alabasta, Smoker is there because, as we remember before, he caught wind of Baroque Works and went to Alabasta to go and see what the hell's going on. And he runs into the guy that was, why didn't you mention his name in the previous two volumes?
Hmm?
Why didn't you?
Why didn't I?
Why didn't you?
What, who?
Okay, Smoker meets...
Oh, Ace?
Ace.
Well, I don't know. I didn't mention it in the previous volume because, you know, it hadn't been revealed yet.
That's true. He was just saying, I'm looking for Luffy. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Ace is looking for Luffy, his younger brother.
Dun, 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 dun. So yeah, that's kind of what really made this arc really good, because it sort of introduces...
I wasn't done yet.
I know, I'm just saying this is relevant to the moment, in that this was the really first arc where we really got a sense of, you know, there is more to this world than just our set of main characters and the people that they interact with. You know, we get to see that, oh, Luffy has a past that we didn't know about, and here's a guy that's off doing something that does not directly influence the Straw Hats. You know, where before a lot of what was happening directly influenced the Straw Hats, but with Ace it was more, hey, I'm here, just wanted to see your bro, now I'm off. You know, doing my own thing that you're not going to follow, but it'll be happening in the background and it gives the world depth.
So, I just want to see my bro and see if I can get him to join my captain's crew. It's like, nah, I'm not joining. I had a feeling you wouldn't join. So Ace tried to get Luffy to join the Whitebeard pirate crew.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Luffy says, no.
He's like, I'm not gonna be under some dude. No way. Mm-hmm. So then, sometime after that, sometime during that, it was pretty funny with the whole goof fight between Luffy, Smoker, and Ace.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was funny. Ace is narcolepsy.
Yeah, which never comes up again in the series. As far as Ace is concerned, that totally would have been like the greatest thing ever if during, well, not going to mention it, but a certain major event involving him, if just randomly during that, he just falls asleep.
It's like, is he dead? I think he's dead.
Yeah, it was like, no, he's still alive. But yeah, it is kind of funny how the whole narcolepsy in the family does come up one more time, but then it's never mentioned again. And you're just, wait. What?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, carry on.
Then, and then in order to hide their disguises, because they don't want to be found by the Billings and all the other Baroque Works agents,
mm-hmm.
So they decided to disguise themselves in Sanji. He gets the girl's dancer outfit. They're like, these aren't really outfits. The leaves we look a different from the legends. Like, he's like, what about the legends? These are bandits. Yes, of course, bandits.
Yeah, that is kind of like, Sanji, you dirty pervert.
And
here's the weird thing, though, is that this may have been the most this may have been the most revealing outfit that Nami had worn to this point. Does not compare to pretty much every outfit she wears after this. At all. It's like after this, suddenly Oda realized, ooh, I can draw her with very few clothes on. I like this. And everyone that was reading that was not a pervert was like, no, why? Why would you do this? But
my character, shut up.
Yeah, pretty much. Alright, and...
So, here's an interesting part, though, that Mr. Eleven that got caught by Smoker's crew a couple volumes back,
uh-huh.
he supposedly gets killed off. And I'm like, wait, you know, that isn't really his real name. That's the name we know him by. So wouldn't he be like one of the main characters that's dead? But he's not a major character, so I guess it doesn't matter.
No, yeah, he's a side character. Side characters die.
No, they don't. They do.
No, not really.
Nah, they don't. Well, unnamed characters and side-ish characters like this guy usually die. Anyways, so yeah, he's dead. And then before Ace leaves, he gives Luffy this card. Do we know the name of it yet?
Yeah, the Viver card.
Beaver card, yeah.
Yep.
And he says something about the Pirate Summit, and at the time, before it became popular, people were thinking, oh, what is it, some place? And it's just a theoretical place. We don't know if it even exists. And then it cuts to the part where the officer agents from ranks 5 and above are supposed to go to the Spider Cafe to meet at a certain time. And I love how they all enter, especially Mr. Two, just spinning, like spinning,
Oh
spinning.
yeah, it's like un,
Yeah.
deux, trois,
Trois. Trois.
trois. Yeah.
Just spinning, spinning, like,
Yeah, that was, yeah, quite
and
entertaining.
sadly, Mr. One appears and he beats his crew up after he sends them off. It's like they look suspicious, that's why. I'm like, yeah, I would probably kick their asses too. They look suspicious dancing. Oh my god. Yeah. So they're going to go to meet up in Rain Base where they'll finally meet Mr. Zero. And wait, I forgot how long this volume was. Holy crap, it's so long. Okay. So the Straw Hats are supposed to try to get to Yuba. And they reach some place called Erumaru, some supposed green land, but it's not green one because of the desert. And this is probably one of my favorite little side parts of the chapter where they meet the Kung Fu Dooku.
Oh yeah, that was really entertaining. I keep forgetting those guys exist, but then they show up again. I'm like, oh hey, you guys.
Okay. So since Usopp got beat by one of them, and basically their thing is that whoever loses has to follow the winner. Will Usopp be following a dugong that's following all that's falling?
Yeah.
Of course, sadly, they leave the dugong behind because they can't take them with them.
Sadly, yes. It
And
would have
then
been
we learn
awesome.
about the reason why there's such a whole, why there's such an oppression and rebelling over in Alabaster with the rebellion, because it's something about dance powder. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the dance powder.
Dance powder, which is used to force clouds to become artificial rain clouds too soon, and somehow
Yeah.
those rain clouds end up going over the capital of Alabaster and raining over. People get upset, going, "Why is the rain going over there?"
Yeah, pretty much. The problem being that the only way that they can make rain appear is if they steal moisture from other areas. So it's illegal because while it could, give moisture to an area that needs it also would be stealing it from someplace that also needs it,
Yeah.
So.
Also, in the desert, Luffy gets high off cactus juice. Only for a
Yeah.
short while.
Yeah. Sorry, Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Or at
One
least
Piece did it first.
they And then they finally arrive in Yuba, but only before, after they met these birds that stole all their crap.
Yeah. It's, yeah, getting to places is not easy for them at all.
Yeah, and then they arrive in, and then after arriving in Yuba, they meet someone from Vivi's past, and then we get Vivi's flashback past, and then we meet a childhood friend of hers, who we later find out, Denner, he's the leader of rebellion.
Yeah, he's basically Vivi's friend, and I really like Vivi's flashback because it's really interesting how Vivi is kind of, she's not the greatest One Piece character ever, but I really like her flashback, especially with, how it, paints her as just being this, like, sassy, well, not even sassy, I've been using that word a lot, but this sort of, like, really rambunctious child, and how she's, even though she's very ladylike and, responsible now, she used to go and get beaten up and beat people, get other kids up in fist fights. I'm just like, okay, that's pretty
Put your
awesome.
dukes up, this is the cuff. Wait, you're a princess. I can't fight you. Put your dukes up or I'll punch you in
No,
the
they don't. They, yeah,
pants.
He don't give a crap. His Koza is like, Koza don't give a damn. He's like, he beats her good, and she beats him right back. So, you know, because they're kind of at that age where whether you're a boy or a girl, it doesn't really make a difference. You're pretty much equally as strong.
Also, there was that part where the king was pretty much spying on her to make sure that she was okay, and he was wearing the burglar mask. I was like, wait a second.
Oh, yeah, that's... Oh, my gosh, what is it with kings and those stupid masks?
They think it's a fashion statement. It's not.
No, I don't know what it is, but yeah. It's a really good flashback because, you know, it kind of drives home how Vivi is friends with the, you know, the leader of the rebellion and how it's, you know, it's all kind of... just being built upon, you know, misunderstandings and everything. And, yeah, it's good stuff.
Okay, and then we cut to the officer agents being in Rain Base in this casino where they finally meet Mr. Zero in person.
Mm-hmm.
And then Crocodile, like, he explains his plans, and then all of a sudden after the plan is over, while the plan was being explained, I think all that was over, Mr. 3 appears and Crocodile is pissed, of course, and Corpus 2 is like, wait, I thought I killed him. Wait, how are they still alive and stuff?
Yeah.
Crocodile is like, oh, no, I'm not going to give you a second chance. You die. He feeds him to his banana diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
Banana crocodiles.
Yeah, that's like, what the crap?
But Torgo takes it one step, takes it 1,000 steps further.
Oh, yeah, that's, interesting. Yeah, interesting parallel there. You got the banana gator and the Garara gator.
So fun. The Garara gator is his first main monster.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder if he's taking some beats from the good old One Piece.
I'm not surprised. Anyways, so then Vivi's like trying to get everyone to go with them to Katoreo to meet with Koza, the South Rebellion, but Luffy's like, I don't want to go.
Yeah, like, we gotta take out Crocodile, yo.
He's like, I don't wanna meet some guy. I wanna beat the guy who's responsible for everything. We stop that guy, we save everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, Luffy actually has that point.
Yeah, and then he starts beating up Vivi. Which, yeah. I kinda wonder if at the time that was like he was the audience surrogate there. It was like, stop whining!
Yeah.
Except Vivi's not not one of the annoying characters, but yeah. And so, yeah, he basically convinces her, like, you know, you need to let us help you. We're your friends, aren't we? And, yeah. So, gonna go get Crocodile. And beat him up.
Beat me a Crocodile and then stop the freaking alarm clock in him and see how it's like. Oh, wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, volume 18. What have we to say?
The pirate is gonna beat the Crocodile in return.
Yes.
Peter Pan reference. Such a real.
Oh my gosh, you were actually clever there. For a second, I was just thinking, oh my gosh, he's being random again. But then you actually clarified. I was like, oh no, that was just me being dense. Sorry. Oh, that was quite good, yes. He was like, jeez. Mm-hmm. Okay, now suddenly I just realized this entire arc was a Peter Pan fan fiction. Yep. Yeah, this volume is really good. This is just another one that's just good. They just keep getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Just better and better and better. And we get the introduction of Ace, who is, like, you know, this whole, hey, stuff is happening beyond what you're seeing right now. You know, it just in a small way, it broadens the scope of the series. And that will keep happening more and more as we progress, while also keeping the focus on the Straw Hats and them trying to make their way through, you know, traveling somehow. An entire volume of basically them traveling is really interesting, and they manage to make their way to try to get to where they need to go, and they have to cross the desert, and it's taking so long, but it's still really interesting. Oda manages to make it really fun, and yeah, it's just all of it together. It just makes this one of the big, you know, the big important volumes, and for me it's kind of a meaningful one, because for a long time volume 18 was as far as I got in my collection, and so for it took a while for me to continue and get the other volumes after that, so that's really a big one for me. And just In general, just everything that happens. I mean, this arc is just amazing, and this volume shows why part of, just shows why it is so amazing. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even really gotten into the amazing
sense,
stuff.
By the way,
the what?
With the camel.
Oh yeah.
I was named you Eyebrows. That's the first name that we had in mind.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Camel.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we've had, yeah, we went through three volumes of One Piece, and we are really getting into the meat of the awesome stuff. So as we continue on, we're gonna, yeah, nonstop, we will continue discussing One Piece continually. And all right. So I think that, did you have anything else you wanted to add for volume 18?
No.
Okay.
I think I did my best line ever. I'm surprised I even did that.
Yeah. This is a good one. I like this. I like this review. All right, so for next week, since Fairy Tail is not coming out until next week, we instead have another new manga to talk about, which this one's a little bit older because we keep pushing it off because it's big. Ranma 1/2.
Oh my god, we're gonna die now.
Yes. Volumes 1 and 2 Omnibus. Which,
you know, funny, I never read Volume 1 and 2. I've read Volume 3 so many times. I still don't remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, well, that's the nice thing. This is kind of, you know, this volume is, it contains a lot of good stuff, especially the, you know, it contains a lot of the early important stories that I really remember from when I was watching the anime for the first time. So, yeah, definitely one to be excited about. And so, yeah, Ranma 1/2, volumes 1 and 2 will be reviewed for next week. So start your reading, yo. And let's see, we also will be discussing One Piece volumes 19, 20, and 21. And I think this will be a lot easier because, one, we're in the zone, and two, this is a freaking awesome story that we're getting through. So, you know, yeah. So, you know, I'm going to have some fun with that. And I think that is it. All right, did you have anything you wanted to say, or do we want to move on to the commentary section?
No.
All right, commentary section it is. It's time for the manga commentary for the week of April 6th. Was it 6th or was it 7th? I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
Today, it's the week of the 7th.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, we're starting off with Naruto chapter 671. Okay, Mo, give our listeners a quick idea of what happened this chapter. And
okay,
try to make it faster than the damn chapter did.
Okay, so basically, Naruto and the Sage of Six Paths, whatever his name was again, starts with an H. He pretty much, Sage of Six Paths just tells Naruto, oh, you are the reincarnation of my youngest son, and guess who the reincarnation of my older son is? And we're like, and I'm like, yeah, I know who
it is. He's like, no. Ah, son of a bitch.
Even Naruto's like,
and it's really weird how they try to pull this. He's like, ah, I see. You've always known, haven't you? And Naruto's like, I didn't say that. I'm just don't know how to react. It's like, you're trying to make me take this bullshit seriously. I'm
clearly not a ton sure. Of bullshit.
Yeah, so turns out that Sasuke is the reincarnation of the older brother because Kishimoto has decided to abandon all sense of subtlety and go with the dumbest idea ever. I also want to point out that in my written write-up of this chapter, chapters, I mentioned in my review of Naruto that if it turns out that Sasuke is the reincarnation of the elder brother, I'm done with this series. Guess what?
You're no longer reading anymore. Okay, finally.
I am. I don't know. Yeah, it's. Oh, I don't even know whether I should make good on that. Make good on that because yeah, this is freaking stupid. But it's nowhere near as terrible as the things that happened in the past that made me quit the series. Actually hate the series. Like this made me realize that even though I said that, this series has disappointed me so much so that there's literally nothing it can do that would actually piss me off enough to not bother, you know, seeing it through to the end.
This might piss people off, but I'm going to say this. I am not going to buy any of the Naruto merchandise ever.
Nah, I'm...
Period.
I have a bunch of the volumes
that were from pre-time skip. If I give a free, fine, but I'm going to give it away. I'm not going to keep it.
Yeah.
I even sold my game. I didn't want the game.
Yeah, I might end up... Yeah, I might still buy all the pre-time skip volumes and maybe all the volumes leading up to the Pain arc. But just in my mind, it will be like, no, it stopped... It ended with the Pain arc. I don't know what you're talking about. So, yeah. But or I might just sell the volumes that I have now because this is such a stupid series.
Kidding.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And we're not even going to waste time on this. We're moving on to Stealth Symphony Chapter 7.
That was an okay chapter.
Yeah, it was an okay chapter. It's basically a fight between the two factions. We have... you know, the ninja and the cyborg wolf guy fighting.
That was kind of funny. It was like, a ninja does not waste words. You just contradict yourself.
Is that right? Yeah, and it turns out that Alice Nijigami is actually a vampire.
Gosh, that wasn't so hard to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then she gets
attacked
by...
she was a demon.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, but yeah, she gets attacked by one of the... by one of the wolf cyborgs and turns into what looks very much like a direct ripoff of Morrigan. You know, from...
Succubus.
Yeah. It's like she has bat wings, but coming from her hips. Wait a minute.
You're actually familiar with Darkstalkers? I'm surprised.
I've played a couple rounds.
Hey, I remember playing the game. It was fun, too. And then, when Capcom started making Morrigan, Angelin so dang poppy, I was like...
Yeah.
I can understand why.
Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, come on, the design is very well known, and I don't know, I'm kind of wondering what the point of the pointy ears is, but whatever. And we also have Jig and Troma kind of talking, and, you know, Troma basically says, like, you know, to me, is like, everyone is equal, so, you know, it's business, so priority is given to whoever hired me.
And yeah, even if they are the scum of scums.
Yeah, you're sort of like, wow, looks like Jig just got betrayed again by someone. That kind of sucks, but yeah, you know, I have to say this series is kind of, a lot of what's happening would be really good if we actually knew these characters. It's kind of hard to really, you know, actually get into the series because we haven't had, we've had like maybe one or two chapters that were just... Here's the character. Here's some character building at the beginning of the series, like you normally have. You have like some smaller stories to really get to know the characters, and having them be suddenly be all, "Oh, I am now your enemy," kind of thing with the people that you thought were going to be his friends doesn't really work so well because, you know, he barely
we don't
knew
know
them.
Well enough. Yeah, we don't know well enough. I mean, they just introduced like a bunch of got introduced like in one chapter with that. One part of the president end up unleashing that those 100 monsters all over the place again. Anyways, that's what got me here. Thinking, yeah. Lately manga these days, Battle Shonen manga generally have been just jumping into the plot so much they don't even bother to build the characters, which is why most stories don't make it as well. Which is why Will Trigger managed to stay fine because Ashihara seemed to understand. Hey. The readers need to know who these characters are. If I'm going to introduce them and people are going to get to know them and care about them, they have to at least have become, you know, they have to at least become like they could become real. Mm-hmm. With Jig and Troma, we still don't know much about them other than how they met and stuff. And
yeah, it is. Such. Yeah. It is really kind of difficult to really care about anything that happens here.
And because of that, series end up being much shorter than usual because there's not much one-off of a character, you know, character moments.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of a disappointment, but I don't know. This series isn't bad per se, but it also doesn't have anything that makes me really care about it.
So it's like World Trigger back in the beginning.
Pretty much, except I was actively hating World Trigger at the time.
Of course you were, because it replaced cross-manage, I think.
Well, it didn't replace cross-manage. It was just there competing. There were two new series.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of, it stuck around when cross-manage got canceled, which was Yes, but anyway, let's move on to One Piece chapter 743, Dressrosa Trembles.
I like that cover chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's always, okay. It's weird whenever Vivi shows up again in one of the cover pages. I'm like, wait, seriously? Okay then.
Actually, I like the fact how the preview page, even though it's really a page from the previous chapter, how Kira just has his face all scrunched up and then Vivi shows up and I'm like, yeah, that's my reaction right there.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much. But, yep, so let's get into the chapter itself. With Sugar passed out, people are turning back into humans, and yes, fortunately, Robin is back to her regular self. She's the first one to transform. But then you see all the others turn back, and there's a bit of a gruesome panel in one of the pits where you see some of the soldiers turning back to normal, but you see a lot of toys just lying there. And at first, I was like, wait, why are they just lying there? Does that mean that when people turn back to normal, their toy bodies get discarded aside? But wait, that doesn't make any sense. And then my slow brain started clicking. I was like, that is a mountain of corpses. And yeah, you have a lot of, you just have like a lot of scenes of chaos of people turning back to normal. And we get to see the toy dog, one who was, who was with his son and his wife, even though they didn't know him, and then he turned back, and she's like, wait, how can I forget about you? And he's I was like, that's how the curse works. I thought I would spend the rest of my life as a toy.
And then there's the next one.
The best part of the darn chapter is we see that one toy that was just like a toy monkey with the symbols and everything. And it turns out he's actually a gorilla. And he's just, it's like, everyone, it's a giant gorilla. And he's like, whoop! And yeah, it's pretty much chaos. I mean, you've got Dressrosan soldiers, government agents, Navy sailors, international dignitaries, wild beasts. Not sure why they got turned into toys, but yeah, it looks like, it's bad juju for them, as they say. And so, yeah, and Doflamingo is just like, you can tell he's getting one heck of a migraine there because, everything is just coming undone. All the people that had been forgotten, everyone remembers them, and now they're just like, oh, hey, Doflamingo is a devil. And then
my fluffy doll turned into a gross man.
Oh, that was amazing. And it's really, and you've got, and just as if deciding, it's like, Doflamingo, I'm going to help you with that migraine. The toy soldier who has turned back into Kuros and Viola remembers him and explains to Luffy, who has no idea what's going on, that, he's the former commander of the Riku army, Kuros, and he's like the greatest warrior in the history of the Colosseum, and he's also Rebecca's father. And so, and then Kuros runs in, like, basically picks up exactly where he left off 10 years ago with the exact same pose, and he's like, hey, Doflamingo, you look like you have a migraine. I'm going to help you with that. Schlink. And just severs his head completely. And I'm like looking at this and I'm thinking, it's like, I actually even see a little bit of blood there. But it looks like Doflamingo, hey, that's probably not a great idea to turn your enemies into toys so you forget about them, because Doflamingo is completely caught off guard because after 10 years, suddenly getting his memory back, and he's like, wait, you're the guy who, and I just like to imagine was going to say, wait a minute, you're the guy that was going to cut my head off. And he's like, oh, crap. And then his head's gone. And it falls to the ground, and that was, jeez. I don't know what to think, that Doflamingo appears to be dead at the moment. Yeah. All right, moving on. We do have we go back to the Colosseum where we have Rebecca, who is kind of a little emotional at the moment because she remembered, oh, wait, I have a father. And I only just remembered it. And then the Mr. Lucy uses one of his attacks and completely crushes the ring, causing everyone to kind of not be able to gain a foothold because they're all falling down while he's standing there in the middle, no problem. And he's all, oh, hey, I got business to see to, time to win. And then you also have the first thing that Koala does is call Hack now that she's remembered him. So, and that was kind of the chapter. So, one heck of a chapter. All right, then. This was one heck of a chapter, wasn't it?
16 boxes.
Quiet, you. Stop breaking the illusion. No, but...
But yeah. So the part where Kiros was running, I just imagine him, like, it was his back turn. It was like, it's meant to look all badass to all of us, but logically, it'll be like, oh my god, when I cut my leg off, it hurts so bad.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's probably, the sillier thing here is the fact of how he is going to be moving. He is going to be hopping all the way to Doflamingo, so I pray that the anime actually flat out just shows him hopping along.
Hopping. Hop, hop, hop.
Yeah, I can just imagine the director's like, Oda, you son of a bitch. He's like, how am I supposed to do this? This works in a comic, but not when the characters are moving. Yeah, but other than that, so Doflamingo appears to be dead, or at least, yeah.
It's well, you're the guy who cut his head off.
Yeah, and so we're kind of having to wonder is like, you know, although I have to say, in the heat of the moment, when you're first looking at it, you're like, oh my gosh, Doflamingo is dead. But then you start thinking, no, he can't be dead. I mean, you know, he's the main villain. This would be a ridiculous way for him to actually go out, so he must still be okay. And then, but then you kind of have to wonder, well, how is he going to survive this? And then you have to remember that right before Kuros jumps and decapitates Doflamingo, we get a shot of, we get a shot of Law, who is reacting with surprise at Kuros's appearance. And so you kind of have to, you're going to have to start thinking, okay, well, Law is conscious. Doflamingo's head is gone. He's clearly not gonna, actually be dead. So, methinks that someone interfered with Kuros's attack. Mm-hmm, indeed.
Law's a traitor!
Maybe he has a different reason.
He has other motives.
Yes, so, I mean, and we also know Luffy kind of has to be the one that takes him down because that's what Luffy does. But still, you kind of have to wonder if Law is the one that, popped Doflamingo's head off quickly to just kind of, keep him from getting his head cut off properly. Kind of have to wonder, what's the reasoning behind that? And so, I guess we'll kind of have to, we'll kind of have to see what's going on, but... All right, it's time for us to move on to the next chapter. World Trigger, Chapter 55, Tamakoma Squad 1, Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So, basically, it kind of, we get to see an action and get the explanation for the Tamakoma branch triggers, which are, rather than being built for reliability, are built for massive outputs of power. And, yeah, they managed to secure, they managed to... Konami, yeah. She manages to take out the one rabbit and save all the people that were taken by them.
You can't remember her name. Remember the people who were behind Metal Gear Solid, Castlevania.
Oh, well, that works. Yeah, Konami. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, so, yeah, she manages to save, to save the people that had been absorbed, or at least their Trion cubes. And then we move on, and you have the other dudes that are... kind of, firing at him with, this massive chain gun, which is pretty badass, but the neighbor is reflecting the bullets back at them, so they're kind of thinking, oh, You know what? We have to. You know, we're going to have to wait for Konami to come back and strike. And then we get to. What's his face? The dude that really, really hates Neighbors. Do you remember his name?
I forgot his name. I think it might have been the Kikuchi squad. It might have been the one that Ashihara mentioned. Oh, it's better than
it does.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, it does look like they are doing pretty well against the Black Trigger user, who is, and it looks like they're going to use Mikami's side effect, which we don't know what it is, but this is one of those rare cases where it's a good cliffhanger of, oh, what is it, this thing that I have revealed, but I have not fully revealed yet. You know, you have to wait till next week to find out what it is. So this is a case where that actually works. And, yeah, it was a good chapter. I mean, a lot of action, lots of fun, but nothing that really stood out per se to me, you know?
Mm.
And so, all right, well, let's move on to Bleach. Chapter,
575.
There we go. Yep.
The killer's high.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's basically just them fighting, and the dude, the Shtanrita, is all, oh, hey, I really want to beat this guy up now because, you know, is normally I know I'm the strongest. Nobody can beat me, so nobody challenges me. But I really want to fight this jerk. And so, yeah. It's basically a fight, but it's really badass, so...
Having the power of imagination is not always a good thing.
Yeah, which we'll probably learn, but at the moment, it is looking pretty badass, I must say. So, yeah. And I kind of like this chapter. Kenpachi makes everything entertaining.
The bit you said about last week about how having the power of imagination is like, oh, I do this and do that.
Yeah, that did make that chapter a lot more enjoyable. And it carries over to this chapter. I'm able to enjoy it a lot because I know it's completely ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in an awesome way. So, yep. All right, then. Let's see. We have One Punch Man, Chapter 34, Part 3.
Part 3.
You stupid?
No.
Yeah. Sorry about that, folks, that we're going through this pretty quickly. But we've got 17 chapters of manga to go through. So.
And we go through actually 19, but two of them are not.
Oh, jeez. All right, well, it turns out that, well, Silver Fang still alive.
Boxers.
Yeah. And they managed to kill the alien guy because they cut him up and grab his thingy. So, yep. And then you get some more fighting between Saitama and what's his face?
World.
Right.
World.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, dude's pretty powerful, and he's like, I am more powerful than you, and blah, blah, blah. And then Saitama's like, are we done here?
Which That's is, exactly what I wish some character would say. Like, oh, you talk so much. I'm like, yeah. I don't do this, I don't do that. Like, yeah, can we just get to it? Because your talking's boring me.
He's like, yeah, you're annoying me. Yeah, we need someone like that in Naruto. He's like, just finally just say to Madara, he's like, are we done? Are you done? He's like, I want to finish this. But, yeah, I don't know. It's really cool. Saitama makes a really cool action hero in that, you know, he's just so, you know, he's so powerful, but he's just like, man, I don't give a crap. But it's kind of weird because his previous characterization had been, I want to find someone that's powerful enough to fight me. But now it looks like he's just given up. He's just like, I don't care. It's like, I've been disappointed so many times. I'm done. So, yeah, in that aspect, it was a fun chapter. I enjoyed it. And, all right.
Nisekoi.
Indeed, Nisekoi, chapter 117, which is basically Raku had to get an appendicitis, so they know.
Actually, funny thing about this chapter, when I first read this chapter, and then like the next day, I was like, wait, am I starting to feel bad? Oh no.
Yeah,
I have appendicitis too.
I've had some moments, it did make me think of some other stomach aches that I'd had, but those turned out to be because of food or whatnot.
It was just because of the heat for me.
Yeah, but I was just like, oh gosh.
I want this, no.
He's like, I need to go to the doctor. But yeah, the chapter is basically, to keep it simple, all the characters coming and visiting him and being silly in their own ways. Shu is going crazy over all the nurses. Onodera is like, here, I'm bringing you an apple. Let me peel it for you. And then she leaves when Ruri is like, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it. Do it. It was like, you know, stay there yourself. And then yeah, all the other characters come. They all bring apples. I have to say that Marika's appearance was the best. Just because she's like, oh, I was like, I wanted to be here the instant that you were allowed visitors, but a nurse caught me camping outside the hospital. You just see
The
her
camping outside the hospital.
the little doodle of that is just hilarious. And then she leaves, and Rocco's like, you can't camp in here, and she's here like driving the stakes for her tent into the floor. It's great. But yeah, and then you have a bunch of other characters show up, and then Chitoge shows up again. She's kind of sitting outside the window. I don't know how she got up there.
Don't forget, she was the one who kneed him in the face after jumping, after climbing over a fence. Jumping over a fence.
Well, yeah, I do remember
Very
that.
beginning.
Yeah, but true. So I guess she can really jump. But yeah, and she brings an apple too, and then yeah, everyone brought him an apple. So Raku ends his stomach starts hurting again, and then he had to stay 2 extra days, and the doctor's like, "You ate too many apples. What were you thinking?"
I'm sorry.
Yeah, this was a great chapter, just for that last punchline where, even Raku was like, "Ah, oh, my stomach. It's like, or it was like, ah, oh, too many apples." And at the
Actually,
end,
Shu brought a lot of apples. The girls just brought one each.
yeah, like the doctor's like, "What were you thinking?" It's great.
Shu, you bastard.
Yeah, it was pretty great. All right then. All You Need Is Kill, Chapter 11. So, yeah, this one basically kind of tells us how Rita is constantly trying to find other people that were in the time loop. And it looks like she goes down again to do the push-ups again because she sees
KG.
KG. Yeah, I was gonna say it's KG, isn't it? No, wait, no, that's not it. But we haven't seen him in so long.
I know.
But yeah, he. I guess she can't remember anything from the loops herself since she's not the one that's caught in the loop. And so I guess she's getting reset every time, maybe? I don't know. It seems it's not very clear, but it would appear that, she's not realized how many times they've gone through and noticed his eyes before, but now she's noticing his eyes and she's like, he's been through hell. And then yeah, so it At the beginning, I kind of like the end of the chapter, where she kind of basically does the whole, she's always asking people these questions during the battle to see if, she decides on a question that she's going to ask during the battle, and if someone answers the question before she ever has a chance to ask the question, then she knows that they were in a time loop, And so. And this one, KG answers, yeah, Japanese restaurants don't charge for green tea. And then she realizes, oh my gosh, there's someone that's been going through the same thing as me. And so,
Then Terry
yeah.
Mo.
Yeah, and so you're like, oh gee, I wonder what the romantic coupling in this manga is going to be.
Then what was the point of the other girl?
I don't
What the?
know. What, fan service, yo. Fan
Well,
service.
it'll make those lonely attack guys go, "That's my waifu there." My, yeah, that's my sapper. Go ahead. Just
Yeah,
move
sure,
that
whatever.
away.
I have my own waifus, thank you very much.
Me too.
I mean, what? No, that's a lie. No, but anyway. All right.
I will not deny it. I mean.
Shut up. We're supposed to give the impression of being normal people here.
We are normal
Yes.
to the point. Anyways,
Shut up.
Toriko.
No, but yeah, Toriko indeed. Yeah, so turns out they've got a watermelon octopus
I
that
want that octomelon.
Yeah, I was like kind of thinking, I don't know how that would taste, but it looks like it's really useful because it can create a safe zone that they can use as a mobile base in the gourmet world. And then
Safe zone.
before they depart, you have everyone is greeting them at the port, and you have Rin and Toriko have like the moment is like, oh hey, sorry that I'm, sorry I have to, I'm not trying to make a headache for you while we're away, but. I kind of have to go, so I guess that answers that question. They're not doing the quick elope and then he leaves, but at the same time, you kind of have to wonder. It's like, he did say he wasn't sure if he was going to come back, so, Well, I guess this gives him a reason to come back. And he mentions, I take care of the human world and the wedding preparations. And then he's like, I'll come back. And she's like, it'll be the best darn wedding you ever saw. And he's like, oh. Come back with God to put on our cake. And I just kind of like to imagine the typical view of God where he's like paying attention to everything that's happening in this world. He's like, what the heck? What's wrong with you people? No, don't try to eat me. It's like, you people are lunatics, I say. But, yeah. And you get to see all the other characters. A lot of them was like, oh, yeah, hey, you guys are going on ahead and basically making a path for us to follow. Kind of like, you know, the Survey Corps in Attack on Titan. Mm. And you get Melk the Second appears again.
Again? It's been so long since we've seen her.
I know, right? But, yeah, she shows up. She shows up again, and that's cool. She gives, you know, Komatsu some whetstone, and a whetstone apron and boots that let him sharpen his knives whenever he wants. And, yeah, you have all the cooks show up, and then they leave, and it's a pretty cool chapter. I like
it. Yeah, Zebra was fun. It was like all the Sand Garden really just like, Mr. Zebra, we're here to see you all. I was like, who are you people?
Oh, yeah. That was pretty amazing. Yeah, this was just, yeah, there's been a lot of chapters that have kind of been, you know, just getting everything set up for when they go to the gourmet world, and this is finally when they are coming to the gourmet world, although I'm a little worried that we're going to be going, like, a good couple years before we see any of these other characters again. It was like, I like some of these characters.
I'm going to be really, yeah, I'm going to be really sad when the Octomelon gets steamed or something, because it's only going to be, you know, their transportation, one-way transportation, not back.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, you know, I also think it's kind of interesting how this seems to not... It's kind of weird. It's like, since Shimabukuro is having Rin stay in the human world, it's like he's... Yeah, she's not going to be showing up again for her until they get back. So I'm just thinking, wow, that's kind of interesting. It's like, on the one hand, you're like, oh, hey, yeah, the pairing is going to happen, but also, she's not going to show up in the manga again. It's like, oh, okay then.
She has a role in the human world now.
Yeah, but I am open to seeing what happens in the future. But, all right, it's time for us to talk about...
Blue Exorcist.
Yep, chapter 56. Okay, to keep things simple, it basically comes down to Lucifer is awake, and he's like, okay, no, don't kill Rin. He's kind of my little brother, basically.
Yeah, I'm not...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, well, he kind of is. I mean, he mentions that, you know, he belongs to our godly father, which Satan is seen as the father of them, all the demons and everything. So
yeah, he and Rin do look similar to each other in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, they do. So, yeah, basically, yeah, he's saying, he's like, you know what, we're going to capture him, but I don't want you to hurt him. And then, but then it turns out that Kamiki cannot, you know, there's only a 0.08% compatibility.
Gosh, I wonder what happened. I don't think it had anything to do with two of her spirits dying, right?
Yeah. And now suddenly I'm kind of thinking, I wonder if this is Shima's plan all along to keep her from being compatible. It could be that he's like a double traitor, a double agent.
But, double agent.
Yeah. But then the creepy petal doctor who... I do kind of like his mental self-image of himself.
If he showed it.
Yeah, and you're like, no, trust me. No, but yeah, he decides, you know what? Yeah, fine. I don't even know how this works exactly, you know, because, you know, they can't go through, you know, it was like the transplant is going to fail. And so he's like, oh, Lucifer's going to destroy me. I know, I'll do the exact opposite of what he said and kill Rin Okumura, which, wait. I mean, Shima even says, the commander said to leave him alone. I was like, I'll make it look like a...
an accident.
Like an accident. So it's like, yeah, and it does kind of show that how delusional this moron is. Where it's like, I'm prepared to accept any punishment. It's like, oh, you made a difficult decision. I hold you blameless. And it's like... He's just trying to distract Lucifer from the fact that they're not going to be able to transplant the Ninetales. But, yeah, then we finally get to see where they all are. They are caught in these, basically these padded cells, or sort of like, you know, well, not really padded, but they're cells with the kind of bathroom floor tiles that are easily washed off of blood.
Ah.
Although there is still some there, and then... Zombies come in and they are really freaky looking because they're made of different bunch of different body parts, and so got a bit of a
first victim is.
Yep, they got a bit of a problem. There's like, how are they gonna fight these? And Then it turns out that Shime is kind of unconscious and in a very vulnerable position, I might add. So, yeah, that's kind of freaky. I wonder what's going to happen there. So, although,
yeah, I don't want to.
Yeah, although worth pointing out is that the door that the zombies came in through, those doors are still open. So you could conceivably get around and go save a certain someone who appears to be unconscious at the moment. But, yeah. Fine. Creepy. Yeah, so I think this chapter was... I enjoyed this chapter. I mean, it had a lot of weird stuff going on, but I still like the creepy elements of, you know, just how screwed they all are right now. And so it makes me look forward to see how they get out of it. And, all right.
I think about the bit about Shima, like, you know, about Shima being a double agent, but that does make sense now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it would work. I could see it. But, all right, it's time to talk about a special something. The special bonus story, Dragon Ball Minus, The Departure of the Fated Child.
Minus?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's called Minus. And, yeah. So, basically, we're talking, doing the, this is how, you know, Goku departed his planet. And we start off, we get to see Bardock, or Burdock, as he's been, as he's translated here, Goku's father, and they travel back home, and I have to say, it's really weird seeing Toriyama's art style coming back to Dragon Ball Z after, you know, years of not drawing it, because everyone looks so skinny. You know, like in previous versions, Burdock was drawn as being like this big bulky guy and he's still muscular, but he's way skinny and they're all really way skinny. And what's even weirder is you've got all the other Saiyans with regular haircuts. Like you was thinking, like I always had the image of, oh, they'd all have weird hair since their hair, it does not grow at all. It's just like, you know, you're born with the haircut that you'll always have. And you've got this one guy that has a crew cut. So either he was born with that crew cut, or he decided to screw himself as far as hairstyles go and just shaved it all off. But, yeah, we get to see Frieza's basically, yeah, these guys are too dangerous. In a month's time, I'm going to blow up their planet. And we get to meet Burdock's wife, Jeanne, or however you pronounce it. And I have to say, this is going to break a lot of headcanon for a lot of people. Because this wasn't exactly what I imagined his wife to look like.
You manage her to look buff? Really buff?
No, it wasn't that. Honestly, oh, I can't remember what her face is. But during one of the OVAs or movies, there was like this one, a group of Saiyans that he was, you know, that Burdock was basically his team. And one of them was a woman. She kind of had like a really short haircut. And it was like, you know, people, Dragon Ball fans know which one I'm talking about. I don't know. For some reason, I always imagined that. Like, you know, that, well, that character dies, but for some reason that's kind of the image I always had in my mind of what Burdock's wife looked like. But then again, I was kind of thinking, well, until now, that was the only female Saiyan we'd ever seen. So, so I was kind of like, man. I got nothing else to go on. I have no idea.
And then we kind of find out how the heck they update themselves.
Well, kind of, it's like they don't, you know, I guess they're, you know, they put their kids in incubators and, you know, they kind of keep them in there until they mature more. She's like, Goku's been in there, or Kakarot as he's called, has been in there for 3 years. And, yeah, also worth pointing out that randomly in this scene where we see Burdock's wife for the first time, in the background you see this one woman that's, I guess she's buying meat or something, but yeah, she's just... You just kind of see her in the background there. She's wearing the same armor that everyone was wearing, but she's kind of looking, she's a bit chubby. And it's kind of thinking, that's not quite what I had in mind when I imagined a warrior race, but okay then.
Yeah, I see it now. I see it.
Yeah. And basically, Burdock says, you know what? I've got a bad feeling about, you know, Frieza calling us all back here. So I'm going to steal a space pod and send Kakarot to a different planet. And they put him in there, and, you know, they're basically, you know, Jeanne is saying, like, you know, if Burdock's wrong, we'll come and get you as soon as we can. And yeah, they're basically, like, you know what, we'll send them to Earth. And it's like, you'll be the perfect place for them. The humans are kind of weaklings. And so, and it's,
Hey.
yeah, well, but it's kind of, yeah, and it's, they say, it's like, you have to stay alive. And then they send him out and say, watch out for the Galactic Patrol. And then we get to see Jacko as he was about to be sent out. And then we kind of do, it's like, oh, and then Goku grew up and stuff. And yeah, so, first thing worth pointing out.
Superman makes a journey to the West. I mean.
Yeah, it doesn't take a genius to start thinking, hey, wait a minute.
Exactly.
And that's kind of the weird thing. I wonder what the purpose of it was because, I mean, the story before, I mean, we get in the basic idea that he'd been sent there to take over the planet. So it made it sound more like this was his mission. We will send him to this planet and he will, destroy them and we will sell the planet. But it doesn't look like that's what happened at all. It looks more like it's basically kind of a Superman origin story ripoff.
No
You
kidding.
know? Where they're just like, oh hey, I sense that something's wrong, so we're gonna save you and send you away, but I don't know, it
Just replace Bardock's name with Jor-El and the wife's name with his wife's name.
Yes.
I know a lot of people, Dragon Ball fans, be pissed at me. Like, what the hell are they compared to?
Well, I mean, come on.
It's pretty obvious. I can't. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, it
I'm
is. I
not
mean, granted,
being
their
funny.
motivations are a little less noble than Jor-El and Lara, which I think that, yeah, that Lara? Yeah, I think it was Lara.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, anyway, pretty sure that was it. But yeah, their motivations are a little less noble. It's like, well, there they send him as like, oh, it's like you must get off our planet and you will be a beacon to to Earth and whatnot. And here they're more like, kill their asses and take over the planet, okay?
That's actually funnier.
It really is. And then it's kind of interesting seeing as like, oh look, the parent, Goku's parents love him. Kind of makes me wonder what the heck would have happened if they had of, survived and then met him years later when he was an adult and had his own family, and then they're like, wait, you did what to your brother? Because remember, Raditz is his brother, and they kind of killed him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you'd kind of have to think is like that would be kind of tragic in a way where Goku's parents survive and they meet him, and then it turns out that they're pretty darn evil because they're Saiyans, and that was kind of their thing. But yeah, it's still, I don't know, it feels weird. I mean, it has a nice sort of like feel to it, and it makes sense with Bardock having been all, oh hey, I kind of was like, I knew that, he was the only one that knew that Frieza was going to destroy them. He's the only one that fought against him, but so it kind of makes sense that he'd be like, you know what, I'm going to send my son away because this, I feel the pres I sense the presence of death. But it would have worked just as well for them to be like, oh yeah, whatever, just send him to this planet, he'll kill them all, and that's his job. So, because it's like when Raditz was first introduced, he specifically said, yeah, you were sent here because your job was to blow up the planet. Which I guess does still kind of make sense. Maybe that's what he was, that's what he was told, or that's what he'd assumed because, his parents were kind of dead and he couldn't check with them to see what's going on. And so, but yeah. That is that. Other than the Superman, it being a pretty serious Superman knockoff, I kind of liked it quite
I'm
a
sure it
bit.
made a lot of Dragon Ball fans happy regardless to see who go what Goku's mom actually looked like. That's all I'm sure it's what they really cared about.
There'll be a lot of them pissed because, like, that's not what she looks like.
That's not how I imagine her. Well, did you make the series? No.
Yeah,
But
well,
I had the idea way before he made it. Well,
true. Yeah, he didn't know
I
what
mean, the
was going
idea
to
of
happen.
the mother, not the series. That's copyright right there.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Okay, then. We've got a couple more chapters to talk about.
All right, we can do this.
All right, excellent. We have, let's see.
Assassination Classroom, Chapter 84.
Indeed. Okay, this was the one where turns out that there's a panty thief, right? And yeah, so Koro Sensei is being framed for being a panty thief, and
We got past that part.
Huh? No, we didn't talk about that part yet.
You didn't?
No, we didn't.
What?
I think we may have talked about the end of the Cops and Robbers game twice.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, the latest chapter only just came out this week, so we're going to talk about the other chapter. So, anyway, yeah, so this one.
I hate you.
Yeah, well, anyway, they kind of, it's not my fault, you're the one that messed it up.
You're the one that made me confused in the first place.
I did not.
Yes, you did.
Guys, just talk about the damn chapter.
Fine.
Alright, so, chapter. This, yeah, so basically Koro-sensei is framed for being a panty thief, and all the clues and hints point towards him actually being a panty thief. So all his students are like, ew, that's gross. And then they try to go to catch him in the act or to prove that, no, well, not to catch him in the act, but to prove that he's innocent. And it turns out that he is, and it was all a trap by Shiro and, what's his face, Itona, I think. Yeah.
Itona.
Yes. So, yeah. Turns out it's bad time for Koro-sensei because he is now trapped.
And this chapter was funny. Before all that, because it was like with the part where Koro-sensei was pretty much, you know, getting framed the whole time, trying to prove to the students that he wasn't really the panty thief, you know, many, many strong evidence points out that he might be the one, and then mm-hmm. gets to the point where he opens up a notebook and it has all the chest size of all the schoolgirls down, all the high school, all the class E girls, and I'm like, wait, who did that?
Yeah, who indeed?
One of them is an E. And the only one is Forever Zero.
Yeah.
That was the best one ever. I was like, zero power up.
Yeah, that was like, oh gosh, that's...
Like, you can't power with the power of zero? Yes, you can. Infinity.
Indeed. Yeah. It was quite, yeah, I found it quite amusing. It was a lot of fun. But, yeah. All right, what else do we have? Shokugeki no Soma. Which chapter is this?
What chapter was it? See, after you said it was the chapter before for Assassin's Classroom, now I'm confused as to which one it could be.
Yeah, 63 I know.
63 right? or 64?
Let's just do the latest one.
The latest one, or you mean 64?
Let's do 64.
Okay.
What happens in chapter 64?
Well, we learned about how Alice get those contraptions, and it was kind of funny how one high school guy that had in charge of club room was like, oh, or something all haughty and high-minded, and then next panel, boom, he loses. And
yeah, that was...
that like, was winner, funny. Loser! Like, I was like, just all like being old, you know, Alice.
Yeah, she's kind of like, yeah, well, you know, I'm not being a jerk about this, but at the same time, you know, you did kind of lose, so...
It's mine now.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I thought that was kind of amusing.
Yeah, and then it goes in, and then it goes into about her bento, about, you know, how the order, you have to eat it. Is that really how bento works? You have to eat the food in a certain order, or is that just hers?
Well...
I think that's kind of how it works with bento, isn't it?
It is. Well, I don't know about bento, but in general, there is, you know, there have been, you know, situations where, yeah, that is the case. It, you know, you kind of have to eat it in a certain order.
Yeah, with me, I just eat anything I like. And then I realize, oh, crap, I can't eat that because it doesn't taste good about this.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All the judges are eating or tasting the food. And then, of course, what's his name? Sazaemon. He's in and is like, over! Whoa!
Yeah.
And then the best part was when the characters, the people start commenting, he's stripped. They're like, wait, he actually did that? Where'd the water come from?
I don't know.
You're supposed to be like, you're not excited about this.
I'm sorry, the Shokugeki no Soma chapter is a little hard to discuss because I don't know what order they're supposed to come in. So we usually read them, like, right after we finish recording, so it's hard to remember what the hell happened.
Oh, well, 64 was the one that came last week, so...
Right. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So, yeah, after the whole funny bit with the principal pretty much doing that, then Somo's like, how are you have to spend for five people finish? So we're going to see what he's got.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we'll have revealed to us his great,
See,
cool
if,
thing.
If Al, if Alice can make divide, can make the principal half strip. Yeah. I'm afraid to see what Soma can do with
it. I know, right? We're like, oh gosh, no.
Suddenly, sensor bars everywhere.
Like, please tell me he didn't use squid. Please. But, all right then. Yeah, it was a good chapter, but I mean, it is kind of, you know, these chapters are a little hard to discuss because on the one hand, cool stuff is happening, but on the other hand, it is kind of like, okay, and then we had more of the, they did the thingy and the stuff happened and, yeah.
It's a manga about cooking. Everything else makes no sense, but it's a manga about cooking. What are you supposed to expect?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, anyway. All right, we have to talk about Fairy Tale chapter
379.
All right.
Part 3, Underworld King.
Yep, this one we have. Yeah, it turns out that the demons are realizing, oh, wait a minute, Fairy Tale wizards still have their... magic. So, all right, tentacle rape time. And yeah, that panel with Lucy being held by those tentacles. And I'm like, gosh darn it, Mashima.
And then her kind of shirt that's open.
How did that get torn?
Conveniently, her chest, just her cleavage is shown, but it's not really exposed. Like,
yeah, that's kind of like, what the heck is going on?
But, I'm like, but then I'm looking like, oh, at least Mushroom still cares about Lucy.
Yeah, it's kind of like, does she have like sticky nipples or something? Is it just she's, or does she just put tape or like glue on her nipples every time she puts on a shirt because she knows it's going to be torn to shreds? But at least her nipples will remain covered. Is that what's going on there? But, yeah, I don't know. And it's kind of weird how they're all having their souls drained out, and Natsu's like, oh, it's like, you know what? I'm never handing over my soul. Don't give up. Think of something you will never surrender. Use it to hold your soul. And you're sort of like, okay, that's a bit corny because it's so typical. But yeah, then Lucy realizes she can force the closure and it's going to drag the demon with it, except he releases Taurus and Aries. And then she uses Natsu, force closure. And the demon freaks out. Happy's like, and Natsu's, what? And
don't forget, Natsu went to the spirit world that one time.
Yeah, that is true, except the whole purpose of it was to get the demon to think that, you know, it was like, oh, what, he's one of your spirits too? And Lucy's like, ha. Natsu's like, ha, nice one. It's like, oh, it's just her trick. Then he punches him, and then he smashes him with a giant rock. And it's like, okay, that makes up for the stupidity earlier.
And all else fails, just beat him to death with a giant rock.
Yep.
Always works.
Yep, and then we end that conflict, and yeah, looks like all the souls are going back where they belong, but you have Hades, his soul appears, and he's like, face was not the true goal of Tartarus. And as I tell Makarov, it's time to release the light, and Natsu and Lucy are like, what the crap?
I read that as Hades saying, kids, face was just a face.
Oh, gosh. Why did you do that? All right. It's time for Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 73.
This one.
And yeah, it's basically King getting his butt kicked for quite a while because he's kind of trying to protect Diane. Mm-hmm. And then we have what's his face? Hauser? I think it's Hauser.
Hauser?
Yeah. He steps in, helps protect Diane a little bit by cutting one of the thingies, but.
Please. It's tree roots.
Yep, the tree roots. But then it turns out that, yeah, King's power has grown beyond belief, and he's actually been protecting Diane the entire time with his magic, so that's why he's kind of having a hard time. But, yeah, now he's unleashing his full power, I guess, kind of thing. So it was an awesome chapter. I mean, it was a great fight and everything, and it was just a lot of fun. I loved it. It's quite nice, quite nice. All right, and... Okay, did we...
Attack on Titan.
Yes, Attack on Titan, chapter 56. Okay.
Or you want to go over the Fairy Tale special?
Let's do Attack on Titan first.
Okay.
Okay, so basically they... let's keep it simple. They put together their plans, and they're like, oh, hey, we're going to make Krista the queen. And then Krista's like, wait, no, Like, I don't care. I'm going to beat you up. You're going to be queen. And then she's like, okay, I'll do it. Lunatic. And then, yeah, and they have like one panel where they're talking about, you know, it's like, even if we have to face that hell again, and you see all the, you see the Titans eating people, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
I remember what this series was about.
Yeah, no, it's like, oh, yeah, remember them?
You want that to happen again? Then we better get this damn plan going.
Well, if he's asking that question to the readers, then yes, actually, I do kind of want that to happen again. It's like, freak, get back to the Titans.
I want them to explore outside without getting killed by the Titans. Mm-hmm. Inside, you know? Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so they do their plan and they get everything set up. And then you have Aaron and Krista are, you know, they're being held. They're given these little knives that will help them, you know, escape. And then one of the members of that elite squad of shows up. And is like, oh, hey, he's the one that killed Krista's mother. Or I guess we should call, yeah, well, eh, whatever, Krista. But yeah, and yeah, he goes and talks to, you know, he has to talk to Reeves about something. And he mentions, like, oh, hey, you know, let's see, what was it? He's like, do you know a man named Levi Ackerman?
Whoa!
I know, but and it didn't even reaction, but he just keep going on as like Levi Ackerman. It's my first time hearing his full name, but you're talking about Captain Levi of the Survey Corps, right? And then it turns out as like I've taught Levi a lot of things. That midget is my pride and joy, and then the guy cuts the dude's freaking neck. And then turns out that a lot of other people. Yeah, all the other people in the company got killed except for the Reeves' son, who is, you know, hiding and looks like he's crapping his pants. Because, yeah. And Krista and Aaron have been captured and their knives have been taken away because one of the assistants tells the captain, she says, Captain Ackerman, as you predicted, they were each hiding a number of blades. And we end the chapter with what is possibly the biggest gut punch, where the frickin' plan goes wrong, their main ally in this gets murdered. We discover that Levi, we don't know what the hell is going on with him, because it turns out that he is somehow related to this Captain Ackerman, who is basically the guy in charge of, you know, suppressing all rebellions. And so we're thinking, okay, is that his father? You know, how are they related and everything?
That's not even it. Get to the best part.
All right. I'll get to the best part in just a second. I just want to say that this is possibly the biggest gut punch that we've ever gotten from this series. And the worst part, we don't know if Levi is a traitor, if he revealed, you know, if he's been, you know, been working for the military police this entire time. Or the anti-personnel control squad, as they're called, if he's been working with them the entire time, or if it's just this is his father and he knows how he thinks, so he's able to predict everything he does. And so you're just like, oh man, is Levi a traitor? But even more so, let's keep in mind, where have we heard that name Ackerman before?
Mikasa.
Yep, Mikasa Ackerman. That was her name because that's the name of her father, who is not Asian, unlike her mother. So it would appear that Mikasa is quite possibly somehow related not only to Levi, but to this, the kind of their main antagonist right now. And so I'm just like, oh my gosh, what the crap?
This would explain why Levi and Mikasa are ridiculously powerful.
I know, yep. Yeah, I know, right. There's so much happened this chapter where it's just, okay, not only, like we discover, not only does Mikasa possibly have living relatives, one of them is very likely Levi. Two, the plan goes horribly wrong because, and we don't know, Levi could possibly be a traitor. It doesn't specifically say, hey, Levi told me this, but it's more, he's just like, Levi is my... It's like that, you know, I taught Levi a lot of things. That midget is my pride and joy.
Is it a midget?
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
Levi is well compared to this guy. But yeah, you kind of just turns out that, okay, so does that mean that Levi is a traitor? Or does it mean that he's like, you know, he's my pride and joy because he works the way I taught him, even if he's working against me? But the fact that he says he's my pride and joy just suggests that, you know, Levi is quite possibly a freaking traitor. And oh my gosh. Yikes.
How would he be a traitor? What? Doesn't he want to get rid of Titans?
Well, yeah, but it could very well be that, you know, he's been playing us this entire time. And so, if he does turn out a traitor, I'm going to need to go and haunt some forums for fans of this series, because I can just imagine their reactions are glorious. Actually, I'm going to go do that right now. I mean, that chapter, holy crud, that was fine. For a long time, it's been so boring, but we finally get a proper, you know, gut punch chapter. It's, I've been waiting for that.
Mm.
All right, so, do we want to talk about Okitenamaru or what?
Oh, that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't even read chapter 5, to be honest.
You haven't?
I don't know. It's... I just...
Covered slow. Is it covered not much happened? It's like very slow pace.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. Yeah, I just... Yeah, I really haven't... I don't know. I didn't read it, man, because the... I don't know.
I like the name. I like the title of the chapter.
No.
Want to know a secret?
Oh, nice. But yeah, I guess, okay, I was just skimming it as like, oh, there are other people with special powers. But yeah, I don't know. It is kind of bizarre. It just, the series has had a very irregular release schedule.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, I don't, whenever I do see a chapter's out, I don't really feel like reading it. It's, I don't know, it doesn't, hasn't really done anything to make me really want to.
Yeah, we're used to weekly, and we're also used to monthly, but when it comes to bi-weekly, it gets a little bit
or as I like to call it, whenever the hell we feel like it.
Whenever the hell we, that's whenever you feel like it. I'm actually trying to read it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Fairy Tail Matsuri Special 4.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, the one.
I'm like, wait, which one are we talking about? I'm like looking at the wrong.
Yeah, the one where we get a, you know, we get a lot of focus on Asuka, who,
that was an adorable chapter. I cannot even hold the adore.
It was pretty adorable. She beats him at, you know, sharpshooting, and then she basically uses Natsu as her slave the entire time, and it's pretty fun. She have her using him like a horsey to ride around, and it's pretty adorable.
Oh, mention Lucy's there too.
Oh yeah, she is there. She is there, and they go on. Yeah, they basically, you know, she's basically Asuka's just, you know, messing with Natsu the entire time, making him do embarrassing stuff. But yeah, and then she just she's kind of like reminds me a lot of Wendy in the way, you know, we're kind of meant to react to her, except it's more effective because she's still completely a little kid, so she has a lot that innocence to her that's really entertaining and adorable. And yeah, and I love how Lucy calls out Aquarius to, like, you know, just play the fountain. And it's like Asuka's playing it with her, and it's like, she's like, what are you making me do, you little? And so they decide to go on jobs. Because Asuka wanted to go on a job, so they go on easy little things like, you know, they do a delivery. Natsu, you know, replaces the fire that hasn't been in this house, and they manage to get some money. And Asuka goes and buys this snow globe that belonged to her parents, and she's like, she doesn't know, you know, she doesn't know why it was in the pawn shop, but they, you know. They talked about it when they were walking by the pawn shop together. And then, yeah, and she basically bought it because she wanted to buy it back for them because, you know, and it's like, yeah, kind of like Lucy's reaction is like, yeah, I agree. It's like, oh, what a good little girl you are. And just hugs her. And then a part of the chapter where you just kind of wonder is like, wait, Mashima, are you trying to, what exactly are you trying to say? Are you are you shipping these two or what? But Asuka basically says, like, Lucy, don't you and Natsu ever kiss? And of course Lucy is like, what? And she says, like, Daddy and Mommy do it all the time.
But they're married!
Yeah, like, well, as Lucy says, well, no, we aren't mommies or daddies, you know. And there's like, it's an order, Natsu. And yeah, and he's like, well, no, it's not going to hurt, so whatever, right? Although you can kind of imagine on the inside, he's like, score. But then she uses Happy as a decoy, and Asuka's like, yeah, it's close enough. And yeah, not so
much. I like how Natsu's like, oh, it's just a kid, and Happy's like, I've been defiled. Like the cat's reacting, not the human.
Yeah. But then these jerks on gliders show up, like, what the crap, and steal the snow, and steal the snow globe. And we're just like, oh, you douchebags, how dare you? And of course, her toy gun doesn't do any good. But Natsu sort of like, you know, covers her eyes. And then he, you know, right as he tracks them and right as she shoots, he spits a bunch of small fireballs along with a cork, and it blows them all out of the air. And he pretends that it was, you know, Asuka that took them down.
Yeah, what's amazing is that she actually hit the guy in the bullseye every time, just that she wasn't strong enough to take him down.
Yeah, it's like, since it's not an actual gun, huh? But, yeah, and then Lucy realizes, oh, wait a minute, you were shooting your mouth off earlier, but you let her win. And so it's like, oh, that's one of your good qualities. And then, yeah, Alzac and Bisco, which I want to point out that it's really weird how you've got these two that are from the Western continent, which is apparently supposed to be America because cowboy clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, and they have names that are not Japanese at all, and yet they gave their daughter a Japanese name, which I'm just like, wait, that doesn't make any sense, but whatever.
Asuka?
It's a Japanese name.
Oh.
But yeah. But anyway, yeah, so she gives them their snow globe back, and like, wait, where'd you get that? He was like, found out, it was like, oh, hey, like, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, we, you know, Asuka did some jobs and earned the money to buy it back. Although you kind of have to wonder, if it was that easy to get 50,000 jewels, as they call them, I guess, that's their money, which is how much that costs, by just doing a bunch of small, easy jobs, how the heck did her parents not, were her parents not able to afford that?
Too busy doing other things.
I guess, yeah. I mean, they have, you know, they kind of have to earn money for, you know, other reasons. But at the same time, you're like, it's only 50,000. I mean, you could do a bunch of small, simple jobs. How are these people not rich? You know, it's just like you could earn enough to buy back that thing, which, as we later find out, they sold it because, well, as we discover, the reason they sold it was because they had to buy money for, you know, for Asuka, which I guess at the time it would make sense, you know, then, because, you know, that was when Fairy Tail wasn't doing so well, so, you know, they probably weren't able to get any really good jobs. So, yeah, but we also discover that in a flashback that the, you know, the snow globe was a, you know, was the payment that they received on the first job that he and Bisca did together. And we also discover that Bisca is actually the Moulin Rouge from the previous special.
Yeah.
Which finally we can discuss that, because that entire thing, there was no indication that it was her. But then just randomly we get this flashback of them and we see, it's like, oh, look, she had short hair there.
Actually, the same outfit. If you remember reading the previous special, mm-hmm. there was a little Lucy cameo and she was wearing her original old clothes from the beginning.
All right. Huh.
It's kind of hard to tell, though. The problem
I don't
is,
know, yeah. It doesn't tell you what the time frame of this is, you know? But, yeah.
Might have been a year before Lucy joined, who knows?
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's a really touching story, this one is, with, you know, the whole idea of, you know, they gave up something that was important to both of them to, you know, get, you know, buy medicine for their daughter. Like, you know, as I compared to her future, memories are a small price to pay. And I was like, that's nice. That's nice and touching. But at the same time, it's kind of a little undermined by the fact that Asuka was able to earn enough money to buy it back for them in, like, an afternoon. He's like, either they suck at their job or she's some kind of prodigy. Which, again, isn't really the case because she just did it with a bunch of, like, little jobs. So, I don't know. It's a nitpick because it's kind of weird that, you know, whatever. It was nice. I honestly think that all of these specials, all these special extra chapters are a lot better than the actual fairy tale manga. Sad to say.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I kind of wish it was like, you know what, Mashima, knock it off. Just do more of these sort of special little touching chapters. You can even do some fan service ones here and there if you want, but don't try to mix them.
Yeah, actually, I do. I also want to bring that up. Other mangakas as well.
No. Oh, yeah.
To, you know, not just focus on the plot so much. If you're going to introduce characters to us and make us want to actually like them, and all these characters at once, at least try and take some time to focus on them, move away from the plot. I mean, don't have the villains be like, oh, I'm going to attack them like the next day. And then major big arc battle. Bleach. Hello. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. But, oh well.
I'm trying to figure out when did Biska join, actually? Like, was she in the very second chapter of Fairy Tail where the majority of the characters got introduced?
I think she was in the background with the majority of characters. I can't remember.
I'm trying to remember.
One sec. That's the nice thing about having my bookshelf right next to where I am. Let's see. Chapter the second.
Man, Tana's hair is so weird back then.
Yeah, it was.
The Mashima style back then.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird style. Let's see. Okay, so we are opening up. All right, chapter two. Let's see what we can find. See Jet and Roy. See a bunch of other guys that disappear after the time skip. A bunch of guys that never appear again.
Oh, yeah, I see you. I see Visca.
Oh, wait, where, really?
Yeah. He's like, like on, like, page 1920 or something.
Okay. All right, well, she's there. So yeah. She's been there kind of before Lucy as well, so. Yep. All right, still don't see her. But anyway, I think that wraps us up. That's the end of the, oh, wait a minute, I think I remember. Where is it?
Did I see yeah, it? I didn't remember the exact page.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's after Makarov shows up again, right?
Yeah.
And let's see. Biska. Oh, yeah, he even mentions her name and she's there in the background. Okay. Yep. All right. Well, and that does it for us. We are, I think that, yeah, that those are all the chapters we have to discuss this week, right?
Yeah.
And all right. Awesome. All right, then. In that case, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up, shall we?
Yes, let's do so.
This has been Manga Cubed, episode 92 for the week of April 7th, 2014. This week we went over One Piece, volumes 16 to 18, and we also discussed The Seven Deadly Sins, volume 1. We also discussed, as usual, the regular chapters for the week. So let's go ahead and wrap things up. Starting with the author comments, and then first we have Naruto's Masashi Kishimoto. I went to see Frozen. As expected, that theme song everyone's talking about stuck with me.
Let it go. No.
No, don't you dare. No. Don't you dare.
I managed to get my little sister to watch that movie just like 2 days ago, and now she's like on YouTube watching YouTube poops of it. I'm like, oh my goodness. And she's watching about the song. I'm like, I don't think that's how it works. The heck? What the crap? I like this. It's funny. It's annoying. It's stupid. I'm like, that's not how it goes, but okay. I'm gonna kill you. Oh yeah, she can play that game.
Let's not play that game. It's like this podcast would devolve very fast. All right, anyway. Stop that. Okay, yeah, that it is kind of fun every time you hear one of the manga authors comment about something from the US. Because normally they're talking about stuff like, oh, hey, this is this Japanese thing. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I have no idea what that is. Like, but here I'm like, I know that thing.
Nice. Okay.
All right, so next one.
Tell Simply's Yoichi Amano, my staff bought me Metal Gear Solid 5, and I beat it during my break. But now I need to know what happens next. What happened to that one chick?
I have no idea.
It's Metal Gear Solid 5, the one with the really risque-looking female dressed like a risque-looking female.
Right.
Okay. The one named Quiet.
I don't know anything about Metal Gear Solid.
Neither do I.
Yes. One Piece is Eiichiro Oda. Once I'm done with this week's chapter, I'm doing a joint interview with Momo-chan. There might be a party. Wait, it's supposed to be an interview.
I'm here for an interview. All right, you're here for the party. Wait, what party?
What? I was like, no, not a party.
Like, party hard. No, I don't want to party hard. I work every day.
Yeah, I was like, I just want to sleep. All right, next one.
Sleep. World Trigger, Daisuke Ashihara. World Trigger 5, Volume 5 is on sale in Japan. Osamu's working really hard. Please check it out.
Alright. What the hell? Bleach's Tite Kubo. I watched Frozen. I loved the music so much I watched it twice, dubbed and subbed. Guys? What's going on here?
So, did Kishimoto and Kubo like meet each other at the movie theater? Hey, I know you!
He's like, oh no, that guy.
Don't let anyone know. I won't tell anyone, I promise. All of a sudden, Oda's there. Hey guys. Oh crap, what are you doing? Don't tell anyone that you were watching it.
Yeah, well, and then they told everyone anyway. Alright, what else do we have? Next one?
Nisekoi's Naoshi Komi. I finally watched through Dragon Ball GT. Bye bye, Dragon Ball.
Why would you do that? That show's awful. Alright, well, Toriko's Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. Do we really need the big and small options when flushing Japanese toilets? I always do the big flush.
I'm a big boy.
I didn't want to know that. What they should do is the way they have it in European toilets or German and Swiss toilets, where the flush... where you have the lever for the flush, but you can also push in the opposite direction to stop the flushing. So... you can flush down what's there, and then if, you know, it's all gone, but there's still a little, you know, but there's still water left in the tank, you can stop the flush. Lets you save money.
Oh, I thought you were going to mention the one where France had that thing where they cleaned their butts after instead of using toilet paper.
No, that doesn't save water. No, not that. No, I mean, just in general, they have, you know, most European toilets have ways of, you know, starting the flush and stopping the flush. So, you know, you can control it. But anyway, next one, last one.
Blue Exorcist Kazue Kato. I want to make bento lunches and do hanami, cherry blossom viewing. That's what I think every year, but I'm never able to do it.
Aww.
It's like, yay, spring, and oh my god, it's so hot out here.
Yeah. All right then.
Like desert.
Okay, we should do our rankings now. Do you have your rankings, Mo?
Yeah, my rankings.
All right, what's your number 4?
Stealth Symphony.
Stealth Symphony, okay. All right, fair enough. Let's see. All right, my number 4 is... I should have done this beforehand. Oh, geez. I'm going to say my number 4 is Toriko.
Okay.
I liked it. All right, number 3?
World Trigger.
World Trigger, okay. Fair choice. All right, my number 3 is... I'm going to also say World Trigger.
Interesting.
Yes. I don't know. I liked it, but yeah. Number 2.
Toriko. Octomelon right. For the win.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, and my number 2 is Nisekoi.
Okay. Octomelon, I would be able to survive any apocalypse.
Yeah.
Except monsters eating it up, but yeah.
Pretty much, yeah, stronger monsters. It's like the Dragon Balls. They're infinitely powerful until they run into something more powerful than them. Then they're worthless.
Like, I wish for Frieza to be killed.
It's like, I can't do that. Like, oh, you useless piece of crump.
You liar. You tricked me. You wasted your wish. Move on. Disappear.
Useless piece of crump. I think I just invented a new word. It's my word, you can't touch it. Anyway, last one, first place. Wait, did I say my number 2?
Yeah, you said number two is Nisekoi.
Okay, good. All right. Number one.
Number one's obviously
One
it's
Piece.
that swimsuit. Oh, okay.
Don't be an idiot.
Yeah, One Piece.
Yeah, definitely One Piece. It's just, I
Yeah.
mean, honestly, if you want to know why we chose our rankings, just go listen to the, go listen to the episode again. We explain it there in great detail, or slightly less detail, because this week we had to get through 17 chapters. It was quite crazy. All right, well, that is essentially that for this week. We don't have any commentary, any questions, or anything like that. Mostly due to the fact that I've been spending the past several months trying to get our podcast feed working again, and it haven't been editing the podcast like I should. But after this episode, hopefully, this will be the episode that you listen to when all those other episodes go up. So, but. Yep, in the meanwhile, as usual, any questions, comments, burninglizardstudios@gmail.com. You can also contact us at burninglizardstudios.com or on Twitter at burninglizard. If you have any questions, comments, let us know and we will read them on the air and answer them. But in the meanwhile, that is that. So we will see you all next week. And remember, the manga is always better.
Do you want to build a snowman?
Well, I would, but it's kind of sunny outside.
Yeah, winter time.
Literally let it go.
Yeah,
See you all next week.